Caputo?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
And Kalamchi is absent.
And when you say absent, he's not joining at all?
Correct.
Okay. Great. Well, welcome, everybody. We do, in fact, have a quorum. So at this point, I would like to go to agenda item number 2 and identify any conflicts of interest that anybody has. Now's your time to identify those, David.
Number 7, number 8, number 22, former students at Midwestern, but I feel I can evaluate them fairly.
Okay. So identified conflict, but you feel like you can be a neutral party in adjudication and decision making.
Correct.
Okay. Anybody else? Cynthia?
Case number IVB4, so it's 20220297. I have a conflict.
297. You said, okay. All right.
That's my only one. Was Hector Fukami.
Conflict for
B4.
Being able to discuss the case at all or just identified conflict?
I'd rather not discuss. Yep.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mindy, let me just go back to Cynthia for a minute. Cynthia,
oh,
are you That's okay. Recusing from the conversation?
I am.
Okay. Okay. Mindy, go ahead.
Same one, B4 and recusing, okay. Please.
And you're recusing. All right. And not to feel like a ping pong ball, but Cynthia, do you have any other conflicts?
I do not.
And thank you. And Mindy, do you?
Nope, that's it.
Okay. And anyone else have any identified conflicts? Mindy, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sorry, I just wanted to take my hands down. So.
Oh, I see. No problem. Okay. Anybody else with any conflicts identified? All right. So with the number of people present, we should be able to discuss and make recommendations on the case that was just identified with 2 conflicts. Is that correct to board staff?
Yes, that's correct.
All right. And I appreciate the head shake, Robert. All right, so that brings us to agenda item 3, review and approval of the minutes from April 18th. The minutes start on page 4 of our packet. So at this point, I'd just like to see if there's a motion to approve those minutes from April 18th.
This is Kappas. I move to approve the minutes.
Dodell, okay. Second.
Is there Dodell second? Roll call.
Can you guys hear me?
There you are, April. You just came in. Maybe you're muted.
All right. Caputo?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Fukami?
I was absent, so I abstained.
Harris?
Yes.
MTS?
I was absent. Abstain.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Absent. Absent.
Okay. With those abstentions, we still have enough for approval. April?
Yes, we did.
All right, so approval of the minutes has been moved, seconded, and majority approved with the identified abstentions due to absence. Now, just on that note alone, I don't know if Ryan or Robert want to just give a perspective on this, but is it reasonable if folks read over minutes and if even if they weren't at the meeting that they could still vote on them, or is it better to abstain?
This is Ryan, board staff. So anybody that's looking at minutes, especially if it's, you're reading it for like grammatical errors, then you can certainly vote on it.
Okay. It's,
but you can even make amendments whether you were there. You probably couldn't make a substantive amendment or change, but yeah, if you're not there, you can vote.
Okay, fair enough. Just thought I'd throw that out there. So folks, even though you don't attend a meeting and you read over the minutes and you see something that you'd like to identify as possible error, other than being substantive, as Ryan had pointed out, we certainly can have you participate and vote. So, but thank you very much. And we are now on agenda item 4, review and discussion and possible action on board recommendations. So we have two open case investigations and then 23, it looks like, review of investigations. So as we have done in the past, I will go over the cases that I'm recommending for dismissal. If any of the cases that I identify is a case that any board member would like to further discuss, just indicate that agenda item and case number and it'll be removed. And the cases that I'm not identifying for dismissal are cases that I would otherwise want to discuss, though I will still ask the question after I read my list if there are any cases that anyone else would like to dismiss. Having said that, I'm recommending the following cases for dismissal. Agenda item 4B7, case number 2022-00338. Agenda item 4B8, 2022-00340. Agenda item 4B10, case number 2023-00012. Agenda item 4B13, case number 2023-00029. Agenda item 4B14, case number 2023-00034. Agenda item 4B18, case number 2023-00056. And case number 4B22, 2023-00095. Out of that list that was just read, is there any committee member that would like to remove one of those cases for further discussion? David.
I'd like to remove 22.
22. Okay, hold on just a second.
That's 0095.
Oops. Yeah, I'm just getting on. I make little notes on my end. You said, got it. All right, so I will remove my notation there.
And I also missed.
Is there any?
Which was the first? What was the first case before number 8 you recommended? I lost. I didn't hear you.
7338.
Yep. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Is there any other board member that would like to remove any of those cases that are listed? Okay. Similarly, is there any board member that would like to add a case that is not, that I did not list or identify? Okay. So, staff, do you have that listing okay?
Yes.
Okay. So can I get a motion to recommend dismissal on the identified cases as presented?
Mrs. Berrigan, motion.
Dodell, second.
First by Berrigan, second by Dodell. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Masrari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay. We are now in review of cases. So we will start with agenda item 4A1, case number 2022-00349. I'm referring to the consultant report here. And so the only comment that I was going to make was to go ahead and dismiss the case against Yang, and then, and I'm just getting to my notes, open a new case. And I just want to see what they have put here on their notes. And I'm not seeing it jump out in front of me, but I'll look at my notes, and they say open a new case against Kay Guzman for no exam, no rubber dam isolation, and poor records. So starting there, discussion.
I agree.
And I guess we can start with, is there acceptance by the committee to dismiss the case against Yang?
This is Berrigan. I had dismissed against Yang, and I noted the comments from the consultant regarding opening a case. I'm in agreement with dismissing against Yang.
Okay. Is there any other comments about dismissing against Yang?
I'd like to make a motion to dismiss against Yang.
Ms. Okay. Berrigan, second. Well,
first, Odell, second, Berrigan. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Masrari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. So now, is there discussion regarding opening up a new complaint against Guzman for no exam, no rubber dam isolation, and poor records?
I concur. I had that same notation in my records as well. So this is Kappas.
Yep, that's fine. So do you want to go ahead and make that motion, Deb?
Yeah, I move that we recommend to open a case against Kevin Guzman.
I'll second.
For the identified reasons, seconded by Dodell. And just for board staff, those identified issues were no exam, no rubber dam isolation, and poor records. And further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Masrari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
So we are now on that Motion carries. Thank you. So we are now on agenda item 4B2, case number 2023-00061. And was there a comment there by anybody?
Yeah, sorry. I had a quick comment. This is Ryan, Dr. Kugel.
We need to go back to the previous one.
Maybe, but just a quick question, and then I'll Rob tell you if you need to go back to it or not. From the investigator's report on Yang, and you guys opened on Guzman, is the report enough to move forward with a recommendation to the board right now, or do you need further investigation?
If it's
Miller Dam, or Rubber Dam, and poor records, maybe you could recommend discipline or whatever it is that you're looking at. But he hasn't been notified, and we can notify him before the next board meeting.
Right. I guess I was just making sure we weren't ahead of the process. Wouldn't he have to be notified to know that there's a complaint against him?
Yeah, we would have to officially notify him, but there's time between now and the next meeting that we could notify him, provide him a copy of this report, and tell him what the recommendation is going to be. You would have to base whatever your outcome is based on this report, unless you think there's more. That's my question is, do you want more investigation on Guzman?
Okay. So I was not prepared for that, Brian. So give me a minute just to look and see if I see something in the notes that provide that. And then I'll give you what I kind of feel would be appropriate. And then also obviously defer to the committee. And I would ask the committee to do the same, is just see if you see enough information based on what the consultant has provided to take that action, further action against Guzman. I mean, I think the one thing that's clear is that there's no indication of exam being done because Guzman was not in the office. And then there's certainly radiographs with no rubber dam isolation. And I just am looking at the records.
Anthony?
Yes.
This is Cynthia. So would it at minimum though require that at least the licensee has a chance to respond?
Oh, yeah, he'll have a chance. I'm just wondering, do we have a, I guess Ryan's question was, do we have enough or should we also get, do we need more of, if they're in existence, Guzman's records or do we have them?
So, right, 100% understand that. And as well, for example, if this
case. We would not be adjudicating without the licensee being, obviously, being afforded their due process.
Yes. Which I think, and assuming that all of them have a chance to respond prior to these records being, prior to the day of the investigation committee date, that is in June, right?
You are correct.
They just need an opportunity to respond. It doesn't have to be before this committee meets. It just has to be at some point in the process.
So the best way to ensure that would be to the investigator do the thing again, Ryan, or is it enough to ask?
Well, that's his question of us, Cynthia.
Yeah, that's my question.
We have enough information to which I'm asking the committee the same question. So what do you think?
I think I have to respond.
You think what? I'm sorry.
He needs to turn in his records. Yang.
Okay, Skip.
I mean, I think the committee has all of the records that are available for this case. And it's not that we're judging the case or adjudicating it. We're just making a recommendation. If we have all the records and all we're doing is making a recommendation to the board, then perhaps we can jumpstart this and avoid doubling our efforts.
Correct. And I think that was what Ryan's getting at. So, okay. So, if there is a, position by anyone on the committee that there is a violation, let's start with that. based on what you see in front of you. If you don't, then we would open it up. We would recommend an investigation into the licensee. I know from my records, when my review and the notes that I have, I saw a violation of 32, 12, 01, 01, 14, and 24, based on lack of exam, no rubber dam isolation, and records that were provided that were not appropriate or deficient.
I agree. That should be enough to send it forward.
All right. So can we move Harris, second MTS? Are you okay with that, Skip?
You bet.
Okay. So roll call on the recommended violation of 32, 12, 01, 01, 14, and 24 for the reasons as identified.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bucani?
No.
Harris?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motohari?
Yes.
So motion carries. So on to the recommendation for action. I would propose non-disciplinary CE with 4 hours of record keeping and potentially 3 or 4 hours of endodontic treatment and management. Any discussion on that proposal?
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Okay, and would you agree with the additional in endo, or are you fine with just the record keeping?
I would do both the endo and the record keeping.
Okay. Anybody else? Karen, are you trying to?
I'm struggling.
Present? Oh, I got you. What are you thinking about?
That we're proposing without having notified the doc. I guess that's
what. Well, he's going to get notified.
Yeah. My struggle is that he's going to be notified, and we've already made recommendations. I guess that's what I'm struggling with.
It's, okay. Right. It's not uncommon that this happens at all professional boards when you investigate something and you open another. So what I'm trying to – the impetus behind the question is – we average about 375 complaints a year. We're already at 200, and it's not even June. And part of it is because of some of the cases that we're going through the investigative committee, which is a new process. We're opening more complaints than we're disposing of. And so if there's nothing else to be gleaned from an investigation specific to Guzman in this case, and you're making a recommendation off of the investigative report, there's no need to do another investigation and waste more time, whether staff or investigative time, to get to the same conclusion that you would have if you waited for another investigative committee meeting. As it is now, if a licensee is notified of the complaint, they're just notified that a complaint exists. They're not even given an opportunity to respond to the complaint until after it goes to this committee. So the only thing that we have surpassed at this point is the initial notification that a complaint exists and a retrieval of the records. So we've received the records as a part of the investigation on Yang. And now that you guys are dismissing that complaint, continuing a opening a complaint. Well, he'll get notification that a complaint's been opened. Here's a copy of the investigator's report, and there's a recommendation that will be heard by the board meeting, and he'll be given an opportunity to respond. He's not losing any due process. We're just trying to prevent a lot of valuable time from staff and investigators being spent writing up a similar report with just his name on it.
I understood that. My concern was, what if there are more records that have not been disclosed? That was my only concern. My concern is that he gets the opportunity to provide what he has.
And he still can do that. If there's anything additional, he has the right to do that.
I understood.
We're not taking that away from him.
Yep.
Okay. Karen, I had the same. That was my concern, too. And maybe, Ryan, I understand what you're saying about the duplication of the process, and I 100% see where there might be time saved by moving this forward in this way, and I'm in support of that. I think what I'm missing here is that I didn't quite see that the notification to the licensee here is solely a notification. I see that they've had an opportunity to respond. I actually have a discussion with the investigator as part of this report before it arrived at this place. But that will not be, that opportunity will not be afforded to Guzman before it goes to the board.
So there's a lot I don't want to take any more time. My apologies for bringing it up. I was trying to make it a streamlined process. And I think all I've done is extend the meeting, and that was not the intent. There is nothing in the board statutes or under Title 32 and Chapter 32, Rob can correct me if I'm wrong. You only are required to notify that a complaint exists. There's nothing in the investigative process that allows cooperation in the investigation. In fact, it should be as impartial as possible. If there's a need to contact the licensee or the complainant, the investigator has that authority to contact them to get questions answered. But the only requirement is that they're notified, and then that they're notified of pending meetings, board meetings, not even committee meetings, but board meetings. And if there's a disposition from the board, then they're so notified. So that's all happening. That's all taking place. We're not taking any due process. The one thing that there's several attorneys on this on the call today, and I've made a compromise with them. They're not just the attorneys, but the licensees. They're not even entitled to a copy of the investigator's report unless things move to a hearing or a formal interview, and that's pursuant to statute. But to prevent everything from having to go to a formal interview or a formal hearing, we give it to them before the board meeting so that we don't drag our feet and make cases longer just so that they get a copy of the report beforehand. This is not, you're not doing anything nefarious by doing it this way. And I do greatly apologize. I never wanted to extend the meeting. I was trying to streamline the process. But let's just move forward. We'll open the complaint. We'll bring it all back. We'll do another investigative report. We'll make that decision in the future.
I don't think we're quite there yet, Ryan. I mean, I certainly appreciate everybody's views, but the views that have been expressed by Dr. Berrigan and Fukami may also be in the minority. And so I think we have an opportunity to find that out. We obviously voted that there was enough to find a violation. So now we're on to proposals or recommendations for action. And so a proposal for non-disciplinary CE in the area of record keeping at 4 units and endodontic management and treatment at 3 units has been on the table. And I think that's where we're at, and that's where I want to pick back up. And so what I'd like to do is see if there is a second to that motion that was originally introduced through Dr. Imtiaz. Is there a second to that motion?
I thought I had already seconded. Yes, Harris seconded.
And that's fine. You had seconded the original violation, but thank you. So seconded by Harris. So at this point, we are proposing action in the form of non-disciplinary CE as identified. I think we've had a good discussion up to this point. Is there anything else that anybody would like to add to the discussion other than what's already been stated? Okay, roll call.
Before I do that, can I clarify that was 4 hours in record keeping and 3 hours in endo? Is that correct?
Endo treatment, management and treatment, yes.
Gotcha, okay. All right, Caputo.
Yes.
Asrari.
Yes.
Berrigan.
Abstain.
Dodell.
Yes.
Fukami.
Abstain.
Harris.
Yes.
MTS.
Yes.
Kappas.
Yes.
Martin.
Yes.
Motihari.
Yes.
Okay, so that recommendation carries. So we are now on to, let me just make sure, yep, agenda item 4B, or I'm sorry, AB, A2, 4A2, case number 2023, see if I'm in the right place, yes, 00061. From what I reviewed, this was a similar situation as to the previous case. So I'm recommending dismissal against Patterson. So is there a motion? Is there agreement with that? And then otherwise a motion to dismiss against Patterson.
Motion to dismiss against Patterson.
Second.
Okay, Dodell. Second, Harris. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay. So related and springboarding off of the comments that Ryan provided, I would like to recommend a new complaint against Sheckley, and I would propose discussing a violation of 32-1201-01-23 and 24 for failure to respond to subpoena and poor records. So is there discussion about that violation? If none, would someone like to make a motion for that violation against Sheckley?
I'd like to.
We have first Harris, second Dodell. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Fukami?
I apologize. Point of clarification, is this for violation or to reopen a case?
Both. We're finding a violation for which a new case would be opened.
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
And Motihari?
Yes.
And Brian, just for my edification, is there a penalty for failure to respond to subpoena?
Yeah, and it's ARS 32. 08, and the max is a $500 non-disciplinary civil penalty.
Okay. So I would move that we do that, as well as a non-disciplinary action for 4 hours of record keeping. So, is there a second to that?
I'll second.
Dodell. So further discussion on the penalty for failure to respond to subpoena and 4 hours non-disciplinary CE in the area of record keeping.
My only question is, it says Sheckley's custodian of records. Is this a DSO where Dental Care, Dental Specialty Alliance, where he needs approval to send records, or is it just the doctor not responding?
I think it was the way I read it, Umar, it was the doctor not responding.
Okay. And I agree.
Okay. But I appreciate that. That's how, what I saw. I'm open to anybody else if they found other information, but that's the information I identified.
I agree with the 4 hours non-disciplinary.
Okay, as well.
Okay.
Further discussion? Okay, so we'll do a roll call on the failure to respond to subpoena as Ryan indicated by statute with the penalty of $500 and a non-disciplinary action of 4 hours of CE and record keeping. Roll call.
Pluto?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay. We are now on to agenda item 4B1, case number 2022-00185. And looking at that consultant's report. We are seeing that the failure to provide records is substantiated, based on Aspen Dental's responsibility. And there was also a recommendation to open up a new complaint. I want to deal with the allegation first. I am identifying a violation of 32, 1263, D, 8, and 12. And based on those statutes, Ryan, are there civil penalties associated with that, or can we impose a civil penalty?
So this is something that Rob will probably answer. I think the only way you can, I don't know, Rob, why don't you take the question? I think it has to be disciplined, but I'm not sure.
But this is an entity.
So,
this is against Aspen Dental.
I thought we were talking about some.
Yeah. Not yet. That's just, I wanted to start with the allegation of failure to provide the records.
Okay. I don't know, Rob. I think it falls under 32, 12, 13.
Yeah. My understanding is if it's non-disciplinary, you can definitely do that. Recommendation, $500 non-disciplinary. If you're going to do disciplinary, then there has to be going in front of the board, and the board can say, here's the violation, and it's greater than $500, if I'm not mistaken. Is that your understanding, Ryan? Because that's what I think can be done.
I don't really have an understanding. I think if it's a penalty, it can be up to $2,000, but you have to have a violation, and it has to be through discipline.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. The non-disciplinary, because we've done this before, the non-disciplinary is $500, that's it. If you're going to go disciplinary, then you've got to have to find a violation. That would be in front of the board, because what the board's doing here, I mean, this committee is recommendations.
So help me understand disciplinary against an entity versus non-disciplinary. I guess my, and it's my own ignorance, it seems like, I thought only disciplinary actions were with licensees, but they can also be against an entity?
And this part I need a little help because I'm not as familiar. If they have some sort of permit or license from the board, the entity, then there can be discipline. If there is no permit or license with the board, but something else, then it'd be, you'd have to look at a different statute to see what's available to them. So let me do it this way. I got to do a little research and get back to you. That's the best answer I can give you right now.
If you look at Dr. Caputo, 32-12-13-H, as in hat, it says the board may do the following pursuant to its disciplinary procedures if an entity violates the board's statutes or rules. And then there's six things that you can do.
You said 32-12-18?
12-13. 12-13. H, as in Harry or hat.
Right. And then item in that same thing, item 3, under H3, it says that we can impose a civil penalty.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm looking at.
Yeah.
So I mean, I'm seeing, and if anybody else has other interpretations, I'm seeing a violation of 32-12-63-8, failure to provide patient records, pursuant to section 32-12-64, and then 12, failure to comply with a board subpoena in a timely manner, which I would like to impose a civil penalty of $2,000 for each violation. That's where I'm at.
But Anthony, the thing is, the DSO just has a management. Usually they just have a management agreement. The relationship with the board, I thought, is with the dentist.
Well, no, they're a registered entity, and that's what we were just reading, which I believe, okay. Well, is Aspen Dental a registered entity?
Yeah, I believe so. We can double check.
So once they're there, Umar?
I mean, at this stage, we're just making a recommendation. So if we feel strongly, and I completely agree with you, let's make the recommendation, and then if it turns out that recommendation doesn't fit the letter of the law, then it can be adjusted. But let's make the recommendation and move on.
Yeah, I think you can do that. As Ryan was saying, this is Roberto. If you look at 32-12-13-H as in hat, the word they use is entity. So entity tells me that it doesn't have to be just a licensee. In fact, the very statute talks about business entities, registration, renewal, civil penalties, and exception. So this would cover any business entity that the board has jurisdiction over. So, yes, you turn H. So if you go to H3, so it'd be 32-12-13-H, and go H3, it says, impose a civil penalty of not more than $2,000 for each violation. So you can do
so
that.
So here's my proposal, that we make the recommendation to find a violation of 32-12-63-8, and let me just make sure, I'll look at my notes to make sure I'm saying it correctly. 32-12-63-D, 8 and 12, with a $2,000 penalty for each one for a total of $4,000. So is there a second to that?
Harris, second.
Okay, so Harris, second. So let's do a roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Lukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motohari?
Yes.
Okay, so that recommendation carries. We are now on to agenda item 4B2, case number 2022-00271.
Did we want to open on the Dennis?
Oh, tonight? My apologies. Yes, you are correct. So we are recommending the consultant is recommending that Dr. Sung have a complaint opened with respect to the exam and x-rays. I'm just going to see my notes because I did not get a good sense of this one way or the other. But does anybody else have a discussion regarding the consultant's recommendation for Dr. Sung?
I would just recommend opening a case for the consultant's recommendation, especially since we don't have any records.
Right.
So in this particular case, the proposal would be to open up a complaint with a new investigation against this
Correct. Licensee.
Okay. So that's a proposal or a motion by MTS. Is there a second?
Bukami, second.
Okay. Further discussion? Okay. I have a tendency to be in agreement with you. I don't think there's enough information there as well. So roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Nodell?
Yes.
Bukami? Bukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motohari?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Harris. So we are now on
I think David had a question.
Oh, I'm sorry. I already switched over to my other screen. David?
Yeah, this is more about an entity question. So when you have something like Aspen Dental, which has multiple offices, do they have to register each office as an entity, or do they have one master entity license registration? Are they treated like dentists, where we have to basically have registration for each office?
Yeah, so they need to pay one registration, and then they have a license for each location.
Okay.
Just like you.
So once you find out if they are a licensee, would that also be checked to see if that's another violation that they don't do each office?
We could look into it for sure. What is it that you want to make certain that they're listed as a business entity in each location?
Well, if that's what they're supposed to do is register each location license versus they just have one license for, 50 locations.
They have one license and then they have to put the license up in each location. So they pay an additional fee for each location they hold.
That's what I mean. Make sure that you have each additional license just like a dentist would.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you, David. All right. Anybody else? All right. So now we are on agenda item 4B2, case number 2022-00271. This is also against a entity, Camelback Smiles Dentistry. What I saw here, and I'd have to go and look exactly what statute would apply, but the big issue I saw with Camelback was there was a lot of confusion with the billing. And I actually identified three separate financial agreements with separate billing amounts for that full upper denture. And I think part of that is the challenge, and this was also identified by the consultant, was that this confusion led to confusion on the part of the patient in terms of their concern about being overbilled. Now, the investigator's conclusion was that was unsubstantiated, as well as the allegation of insurance misrepresentation. So I'm open for input on how others feel regarding any violation against Camelback Smiles, though I am concerned about the three separate billings for the same procedure code.
Anthony, I have a question. I haven't done a denture in 20 years. When you do immediates, do you bill for the immediate and then you bill for the final? Or does the bill for the final cover the immediate?
So I will certainly defer, but I will tell you what I have read, because this I came up in another case. It could have been this case, but I think it was another case. The billing part, to your point, I think, Umar, is you only can bill the insurance company once. So I think what has to happen is if you're billing for any other kind of denture, you have to make sure the patient understands that that's a separate billing, because the insurance company most likely will not cover that because they look at that as a duplicate fee. David, go ahead.
No, I was going to clarify what you were just saying. So, yes, there are two separate CDT codes for immediate versus final dentures. So, yes, they could be billed differently. I guess it would be your contract with the insurance company if you can collect for that, if you're participating.
Right. But I think those the procedure codes they used, Umar, in this particular case were the same. Did you see different ones? Yeah. No, I didn't either. All right. So does anybody have a feeling one way or the other regarding a violation on behalf of Camelback Smiles?
This is Fukami.
Yeah.
So I completely agree with you. I had some confusion. I agree that ultimately the billing was probably appropriate, right? How it was done, and thus the investigator didn't find that the complaint was substantiated. However, I agree that at heart here, I think, is that the patient was not informed, or at least didn't make clear that they understood what was happening before the treatment was done. And so to that point, I was not going to suggest a violation, but rather a letter of concern. But I didn't know if that was congruent with what other folks are thinking.
The one thing I want to add to the mix, if I can ask you all to go to page 257, that has the scan of a grievance letter that was sent on behalf of Cigna Dental. And I found that interesting in that they're representing the patient regarding treatment. And you could see how they even said that the patient was given two separate quotes for the dentures. And then there was other unanswered questions, and they're asking for some of the things that the investigator identified as far as signing treatment plans, an appropriate account ledger, and chart notes. And the question I have here is, one, I never see a response to this grievance letter that was sent by Cigna to Camelback Smiles. I don't see any response by Camelback Smiles. And nor do I see anything else in the record that seems that that was corrected. So I don't know. I'm just stuck on, I don't disagree with your comments, Cynthia. I do think that ultimately it was resolved. But I also am not sure if we're missing it because it was so confusing in the first place. Other comments?
My observation, this is Berrigan, were there any quality of care issues? It didn't appear to be so in the end.
Well, not but, to the
not
right, but the entity would have been, wouldn't have been responsible for any of that per se, even yeah. though I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
I guess, for example, there is a statute, 32-1263-D10, engaging in repeated irregularities in billing. And I think that's the challenge, is that I'm seeing irregularities in billing. I just don't know if I'm the only one.
It was very confusing regarding billing.
Okay, let's do this. In the vein of what Dr. Harris said earlier, I would move that we find a violation of 32-1263-D10 and impose a civil penalty of $2,000 and make that recommendation to the board to further adjudicate. Is there a second?
Second, Berrigan.
Okay. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay, so that recommendation carries. Thank you. So there was also a recommendation by the investigator to open a new complaint against, is it Hosseini? Am I saying that correctly? And I would direct the committee to pages. I saw the same thing and I had my own concerns, but I would go to page 325 and 326, starting at the bottom portion of 325, where it the title is Oral Surgery Extraction Procedure Note. The concern that was identified that by the consultant is there's no indication of what type or amount of local anesthetic was administered. I also saw no documentation of vital signs. I didn't see rationale for prescribing an opioid or antibiotic for the extraction of two teeth. I also am concerned that it's clearly identified in the patient's record that they have diabetes, yet nowhere in the record does it indicate any documentation of the HbA1c or day of blood glucose numbers. So those to me are significant issues that I identified. There are some others. On page 341, the patient indicates no, let me see if there is something on here, because I saw a comment. I'm just going to revisit myself here. But this is the patient's health history that they completed. And I think the issue here was that they didn't indicate any comorbidities, but yet they clearly have diabetes, and there was some indication of heart disease beyond just hypertension. And so I'm sort of struggling with that. So I'll kind of just stop there and see if there are any other comments anybody has regarding anything I just brought up.
Is This is Fukami. There was a, I saw the same thing only because I was keyed into the local anesthetic lack of documentation and then realizing that the medical history had nothing or very little checked off, and yet you're right, elsewhere in the records, it alluded to the fact that the patient not only has diabetes, but also something that says heart transplant. He actually wrote down heart transplant somewhere, which no other details were given, and it does say in the notes that the patient was asked if he was anticoagulated, on anticoagulation for this procedure, but no other expansion of details. And so to that end, it just the comment about why local anesthetic wasn't documented just a little bit more concerning. And so, yes, I mean, I think that needs to be explored now, pursuant to the earlier discussion as to whether open a case or does this provide enough details to provide a discussion about whether there was a statutory violation. I just don't know. I personally would like to see more of an explanation from the provider, but I don't know if what we're asking for here is to either open a case or if you want to move forward with recommendations.
Right. And I think just to reemphasize, the board can make that decision too, Dr. Fukami.
Yep.
So, we're making recommendations, right? And they can follow through on those one way or the other.
I do understand.
And one of the times that I did see blood pressure listed, which brought up another issue for me, is on page 3. And I don't think it should be lost either that this patient is 75 years old. but on page 374... there is indication that on their flow sheet, it's towards the bottom of that page, that the blood pressure was 155 over 102. And it gets followed through on a number of other places in their documentation, but yet it doesn't seem like that was addressed at all. And I looked further into this. This brings up another issue because this is now another licensee that's involved. It looks like it's Dr. Felian. But on page 455 is where identified they did the comprehensive exam or the initial exam from what I could ascertain. No vitals were obtained and there was no review of medications with the patient at that time. So I want to come back to this, but there's a lot of deficiencies here. From the notes that I have to your question or comment, Dr. Fukami, I was comfortable opening up a complaint against Dr. Hosseini for inadequate patient evaluation and treatment, as well as a complaint against Dr. Felian for inadequate patient evaluation and treatment. Whether there we can make recommendations on that, I would be comfortable proposing recommendations, but I'm also I defer to the committee as how they want to proceed. So are there other comments on opening up a complaint as well as recommending action to the board based on the records that I don't think we're going to get more records to Ryan's point. So really what we see is what we get from the records because it looks like the entire record from the practice was provided to us or to the board. So other discussion, let's just start with Hosseini in recommending a violation of 32-1201-14.
So can I ask for clarification? As far as not being able to obtain more records, for those who have had experience working with this particular company, or maybe you saw it earlier, I don't see any anesthesia or sedation record in the documents. I just assumed one would be coming if we asked for one, but maybe it wasn't the focus of this complaint, so therefore it wasn't included.
Right. I don't think they did sedation. Are you saying they did sedation for this?
Oh, no. That's right. I apologize. I'm thinking of a different one. Mixed it up.
It's okay.
Thanks.
Go ahead.
No, I think to your point, this is the extent of what they will likely have on this person then.
I believe that is correct.
Got it.
I would recommend, so I would just go back to my recommendation. You know, I'm focusing on just patient evaluation and then follow through with treatment, actually for both doctors. So that would just leave a recommended violation of 32.12.01.01.14. So starting with Hosseini, is there a second to that motion for 32.12.01.01.14?
Second, Harris.
Second, Harris. Okay. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Nadal?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
MTS?
Yeah.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
And as far as recommended action, I would propose non-disciplinary action in the area of 4 hours of CE and record keeping. And I believe we've discussed this before, but that would include diagnosis and treatment planning, correct? I think we've had some affirmation on that, but I just want to be sure. Deb, is that correct?
That's correct.
Oh, Mindy, thank you. Okay. So I'm fine with proposing non-disciplinary CE in the area of 4 hours of record keeping for Hosseini.
Second.
Second, Berrigan. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
So the other issue at play here or concern is with Felian, and it's for the areas that I identified previously due to the records. And so I'm proposing a violation of 32.12.01.01.14 for Felian. Is there a second to that?
Berrigan, second.
Berrigan, second. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
And Motihari?
I'm still staying here. Sorry, conflict of interest. I didn't know it was going to come up.
Abstain? Is that right, Mindy? You said abstain?
Correct.
Okay, thank you. All right, and then I would recommend non-disciplinary CE in the area of record keeping at 4 hours. Is there a second?
Berrigan, second.
Berrigan, second. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
And Motihari is conflicted.
Upstate.
Okay. The recommendation carries. I think that was everything I had. Anybody else? Any other? Okay. Let me just make sure I'm seeing no hands are up. Okay. So we are now on agenda item B3, 4B3, case number 2022-00284. And based on the consultant's report, we are looking at, of the five allegations that are presented, allegation one, failure to diagnose and treat periodontal disease was substantiated. Allegation four, failure to maintain records was substantiated. And allegation five, failure to reply to board subpoena in a timely manner was substantiated. I am proposing a violation of 32.12.01.01, 14, 23, and 24. So is there a second to that?
Pair of seconds.
Okay. Further discussion. Seeing none, roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Lukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
So, Ryan, I might need a little help on this one. We can handle the failure to respond to subpoena separately to the other recommendations. Is that correct?
You can. If you're going to have one disposition, you can add it in to that. Just so if it's an order, you can just add it in as a violation of 1208.
Right. My point, though, is that with the failure to respond to subpoena, that's a non-disciplinary action, correct?
It is,
or is it just a $500 penalty for failure to do that?
Yeah, and if all you're doing, if you're doing discipline, you can just add this in a consent agreement, okay, and they would be agreeing to the $500 civil penalty.
Right.
So you would normally only get for non-discipline, but in case...
I see.
Yeah.
Nope, I appreciate that. The reason why I'm asking the question to the committee... I'm recommending disciplinary action to include CE in record keeping at 4 hours, ethics at 3 hours, and 6 months of chart auditing.
Harris, second.
Is there second by Harris? Further discussion?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Cynthia, go ahead.
Sorry about that. So, yeah, Tommy, there was a point made about this prior violations by this licensee. I wonder if that needs to be...
By the investigator?
Yes.
What page is that on?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't make a note.
The only thing I saw is that a refund was made to the patient, so I'm not getting caught up in any of that. I didn't see that. So did anybody else see that? And if they have a reference page for that? Did you have a question regarding that though, Cynthia? You mean taking that into account? Is that what I'm hearing?
Correct. Into account, but let me look first and I'll get back to you here.
Ryan, go ahead.
I might be able to ease your concern, Dr. Fukami or Dr. Caputo. I wouldn't spend too much time on that. That's something that the board will have to address. Through the audit process, that's what the auditors identified, that the board is the one that should look at a history, and not so much this committee. So maybe don't waste your time on that.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah. As to the motion, and since we're in discussion, the six-month chart audit, what do you want that to look like? Do you want all, you want to review, because we'll probably give this out to affiliated monitors, and they'll basically do the audit, and but it'll have to be like a percentage, like they're going to have to give a list of all clients for the next 6 months, and then the monitoring company will look at 2%, 5%, and then what do you want them to be looking for?
Well, we want, I mean, the issues are just how this dentist was maintaining records and not having complete records as well. There were restorative needs that were identified but never mentioned by the dentist. So I just think there's a lot of deficiencies and how they were documenting what they were doing. So my thought process on that would be a review of medical history, treatment planning, and chart notes.
About medical history, meds, allergies, periodontal charting, diagnosis, chief complaints, and treatment planning.
In chart notes?
Yeah.
Does that help, Ryan?
Anthony, I had a question.
Yes?
How do we know if it's not misdiagnosis more than not documenting it? How do we know if the dentist never actually diagnosed anything?
Right.
I mean, I know we are including we are including the diagnosis in there, but
yes.
I think we need to emphasize that a little bit more.
Okay. But I do think that that's what's gained through the chart auditing process is exactly understanding what the dentist is doing and then facilitating where there's deficiency. So then maybe as a follow-up, Ryan, who looks at that report when it comes back from that affiliated monitoring? Is it a board representative or is it staff?
Generally, well, it could be you guys even. We could agendize it in the future for the committee to review the chart audits, which wouldn't be out of your scope. So it could be that. It could be an investigator or it could be the board. It would not be staff simply because we just don't have that expertise. So, but I still think that you need to come up with, I know the chart audit and I got that part now, but I think you need a percentage, you know, like 20 cases over the next, I mean, that's a pretty low number, but if you want to do 50 of all charts, you know what I mean? Some sort of number, percentages are easier to work with.
Yeah. I would say a sampling of at least 30% should give us an adequate review. Anybody else have thoughts on that?
Yeah, what if we say new patient exam and, you know, diagnosis and treatment plan? That would actually limit the new patient exam so we know his diagnosis or not, or documentation. I don't know, just an idea.
No, I like it. That's what I'm looking for is anybody else's input. So there's a proposal. Anybody else have other thoughts?
I have a question. Ryan, maybe I misunderstood this, that you were discussing the resources available for doing the auditing. Is this at the board's expense or at the patient's expense?
It would be at the licensee's expense.
Okay, thank you. That answers. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And Rob would generally write those up where it would actually say in the order that all expenses would be paid by the licensee.
Thank you.
So is the idea of evaluating And then so to that point, Mindy, do you want all new exams or some percentage of new exams?
If we are giving the period of time, we can say, if you say 3 months all new exams or 6 months some percentage of exams. I don't know
let's
how
busy they're. Let's say 6 months of 50% of all new patient exams.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay. Does that look good to you, Ryan? And it, as listed by Dr. Harris, what to obtain. Okay. So with that clarification on the auditing, there is a recommendation, which I believe was seconded, for disciplinary CE with 4 hours of record keeping, 3 hours of ethics, 6 hours of chart auditing to include 50% of all new patients' exams with the areas identified to be reviewed, and a civil penalty of $500 for failure to respond to subpoena. And just so I know, was that seconded or do we need a second?
It was seconded by Dr. Harris.
Okay. So further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Mukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motohari?
Yes.
Okay. We are now on agenda item 4B4, case number 2022-00297. And I'm sure you all appreciated that someone that you know was a consultant on this case. I'm not going to try to talk too much unless people have questions for me, but I pretty much said everything that I'm going to say in the report. This was an adverse occurrence that was reported on from October 7th of 2022. So starting there, are there any questions, comments? I know we have two members not participating. So from the rest of the committee, are there any comments, questions that you might have? Just given the nature that I was one of the consultants, I'm just sort of doing it this way.
And if I can, if I think you're going to have three not participating, it's going to be Dr. Fukami, Dr. Motohari, and then you, since you were the consultant.
Well, I can't participate because you have my, I'm conflicting, is what you're saying?
So Dr. Harris is going to have to.
All right, well, then I will, I will turn it over to Dr. Harris.
Okay. Just for commentary, I have a problem with this case. I think there's something here that needs to be managed. I think this oral surgeon demonstrated a lack of professional conduct when it came to how the sedation was handled. Thank goodness the overall outcome was not a bad one, but I think that was more fortune than it was a function of skill or professionalism. This is one of those rare times where I think that an adverse event being reported actually uncovered something that I think the board probably needs to act on. So I personally would like to make a motion to find the disciplinary conduct or fine for unprofessional conduct. Is there anybody who wants to second?
I'll second, Dodell.
Roll call.
As discussion at 32.1201.0114.
Yes, please. Thank you.
Oh, Skip, do you also want to do the records too?
Yeah, I guess. Sorry, I didn't really focus on that. If you'd like to amend, I'd be amenable.
Yeah, I'd like to amend that 32.1201.0124 for record keeping. Also,
yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Sorry.
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
I believe that means the motion carries. So then on to recommendations for what disciplinary action. I do think it's worthy of noting that this patient was not a negative outcome, that there wasn't a fatality or a severe problem long-term. Also, I'd point out that this doctor has been practicing and doing anesthesia since this adverse event, theoretically without complications. So I personally think that, you know, suspending the 1301 in this situation is probably a little bit too far. But I would like to get, you know, people's opinions on maybe a significant amount of disciplinary continuing education. Any discussion?
Skip, what do you recommend for, he failed to stop the procedure when they couldn't monitor. He kept, that's just ignoring, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fundamental breach of sedation protocol. I'm not sure what subjects I would start from the beginning almost, 30 to 60 hours in patient management and general anesthesia, basic general anesthesia 101.
So Skip, based on what you just said, I was actually thinking temporary suspension of 1301. If you feel this is that much of a risk in these many hours, should he continue doing cases while this is resolved?
Well, I think if we had gotten this adverse event 3 hours after the adverse event occurred, that might, you know, show some benefit to the public safety. But, I mean, given the fact that this is a significant period of time later, I think it might be hard to justify. Also, I'm a little reticent to remove somebody's ability to feed their children while we take corrective action. So I know that lately there's been a fad to do suspensions of the 1301s, and maybe that's good, maybe that's bad, I don't know. But this didn't strike me as though we were protecting the public. This is more an oral surgeon who needs to be reminded not to let his hubris get the best of him.
Skip, what do you think of having him keep his license but renew the CE to get the license?
It's functionally the same thing. I mean, suspending his license today when he was doing general anesthesia yesterday just doesn't strike me as a teaching tool. I can understand if there was a fatality. I can understand if this was, being managed shortly after the occurrence, but this was a significant period of time ago, and he's been allowed to do general anesthesia for the last so many months. If you guys want to make that motion, I'd be willing to put it up for a vote. But I personally think suspending his license is probably a little too far. But that's just my personal opinion. I'm sure Anthony has a different view on this.
I wasn't thinking of suspending his license. I guess it just concerns me that this could have been a really bad adverse outcome from what I read.
I agree.
And he got lucky, for lack of a better term, on how it came out. So that's why I was still thinking that protecting other people before, while he's doing his I would be honest with you, I was thinking about even having him recertify, going through the whole. When you do the 1301, don't you have to have like a oral test and all that, if I remember right?
Yeah, but to repeat your 1301 completely would require a year of residency.
No, not repeat. I'm not talking about that. But in terms of when you get your 1301 initially, don't you have to have some type of interview? Is there some type of test for the 1301? Like an in-office type thing?
Not for oral surgeons. your residency is what you provide as proof of your competency.
Person at the evaluation with the dental board, not really a test. I mean, I guess layman's terms, the evaluator is checking to make certain that the person is capable of doing 1301 anesthesia administration.
That's you're mentioning like to repeat his site visit?
Yes.
I'd be willing to entertain that. That certainly would send a strong message.
Yes, that's what I was returning. I mean, that's what I thought, because I know our surgeons had to do that here at the school. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's true. And there is a question and answer period during those site inspections that doesn't really touch upon the deficiencies in this case. But I do think it would send the right message. I'm just not sure that I think that suspending him from practicing in the meantime is going to accomplish very much, but I defer to the rest of the committee.
Okay, what do you guys think of hours of CE in sedation and anesthesia and also in record keeping? We come up with an amount.
This is Berrigan. That seems more reasonable. I don't mean to sound more reasonable, but I'm more comfortable with those items. This is a recent graduate, I assume.
And then, Skip, do they also offer CE in management of medical emergencies, or is that covered under sedation CE?
Yeah, I mean, it would be covered under both, but yes, they do offer specific CEs in management of medical emergencies.
Yeah, so I would recommend some CE in medical emergencies, along with a review of sedation and anesthesia, along with record keeping.
You want to put some numbers to that?
That's what I can't come up with. That's what I was counting on you guys. Maybe Cynthia can chime in on sedation and emergency numbers. Oh, yeah, she's not. Is she one of the people off the case?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so whatever you and David and everybody else thinks.
So am I hearing that you'd like to make a motion recommending disciplinary continuing education for 10 hours in general anesthesia, 10 hours in managing medical emergencies, and 4 hours of record keeping?
Yes.
Do I have a second?
Dodell, second.
Discussion?
Actually, before I want to retract that for a second, 10 hours seems like an odd number to do for CE, because that's like...
How about 12 hours?
Yeah, that would be more reasonable, because that could be like a two-day course or something.
So we're base 6, not base 5? I'm on it. Yep.
Okay.
So amended, 12 hours in general anesthesia, 12 hours in managing medical emergencies, and 4 hours of record keeping?
Yes.
I second.
And I also would like to make sure we add the re-site visit too.
And are you recommending that the site visit
happens after all the CE?
After the CE. Oh, that sounds like we would say recommend a repeat of general anesthesia 1301 site visit at the completion of the requested or required continuing education.
Yes.
I like it. Roll call.
Harris?
Yes.
Aswari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Okay, well, moving on, now we're back to Dr. Caputo. Yes?
Yes, to unmute himself.
My computer did that, darn computer. All right, so we're now on agenda item 4B5, case number 2022-00314. And I will just pull that up for us. And according to the consultant, let me see here. So we are seeing, let me just see if they did it. Yeah, it's, here we are. So as far as there were four allegations provided, two of the four, the investigator felt were substantiated. Allegation one, jaw pain due to extended dental treatment. And then allegation four, patient not provided with information in her native language to understand the plan, care, or cost. And then last, the other two allegations, possible overcharging and not providing a receipt for cash payments, as well as holding the patient against her will and have patient having to call the police, the investigator indicated decision for the board, as well as for us to opine. So starting there, I am proposing, and let me just make sure I'm on my notes correctly. I have to close my other box. Hold on just a second. There we go. So I am proposing violation of 32.12.01.01, 14, 16, 23, and 24. And just since they're somewhat new, 14, 23, and 24 we know. And let me pull up 16, unless someone knows it off the top of their head.
Irregular billing.
Irregular billing. Thank you very much. So that's where I'm starting. So is there discussion regarding those violations? And if not, is there a motion for those violations?
I'd like to add two more.
Go ahead.
I'd like to add one about failure to comply with the subpoena because he was contacted three times. And
that's in there. That's 23, David.
Oh.
You're fine, but that's okay. What was the other one?
Okay, the other one was the maintenance of record. Did I miss that one too?
You did. Yeah, I just added at 16 we haven't discussed before. So basically we have 14, 16, 23, and 24.
My bad.
That's okay. So seeing that that is acceptable to you, do you want to make a motion for that violation?
I find
for those violations?
Yes, I make a motion to make up for my bad.
And is there a second?
Second, Fukami.
Second, Fukami. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Osorio?
Yes.
Farragan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Impiez?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
I struggled a little bit on what was happening here, but I came to the conclusion that this patient was definitely being taken advantage of related to the language barrier. It obviously is inappropriate, and it certainly bothered me. I do think there was a concern regarding payments that were made. And I think the fact that the patient had that documented statement that the dentist tried to pass off as a consent to the police when they arrived was sort of willful on their part to be deceitful. So just considering that as well as all the other deficiencies identified by the investigator, I'm proposing disciplinary action with CE, 4 hours of record keeping, 3 hours of ethics, 6 months of chart auditing. And we can certainly discuss the specifics on that based on our previous discussion, as well as restitution in the amount of $1,450, according to the records that I saw. So I'd be open for other people's input. And then the $500 civil penalty for failure to respond to subpoena. So discussion or a second to that proposal.
Harris seconds.
Okay. So I just want to make sure as a committee we're comfortable. Do folks concur on that $1,450 amount? That's what I'm seeing, and I think the patients do that in return based on what was happening with their interaction with the dentist.
I agree. I couldn't find a number either except for that one, which was written in handwritten on one note, but the complaint right. was for 2,200, which I couldn't substantiate, but that's the problem with poor records, right? Is you can't, you have nothing to refer to in the first. So.
Yep. Okay. I appreciate that though. Yes. Other comments about the 1450, or it looks like that's a number we're comfortable with. And then as far as the chart auditing is concerned, based on Ryan's previous query and some of the things that we discussed, is there a way we would like this chart auditing to look? I feel like there's a lot of interesting documentation going on with this dentist. I would be open to looking at least 30% of all charts on all patients, not just new patients, in the areas that Skip previously identified, which we could review, as well as anything else anybody would like to add or delete. So comments on the chart auditing and what that would look like? And are folks comfortable with 30% of all charts for the next 6 month period of time?
This is Berrigan. I'm comfortable with that. I just don't know the parameters.
Are you comfortable with what we previously discussed,
yes.
Karen,
yes.
with respect yes. to like the list that Dr. Harris had put out?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I mean, I am too. Any other thoughts on that? Are people comfortable with that list?
I have a silly question. This is obviously a randomly procured number of cases. Do they just use like a metric to figure out what that 30% is?
So what Ryan was mentioning earlier, Cynthia, is that the dentist is required to submit to the company, the affiliated monitoring, all their patient list. And then they would do a 30% of that list to the auditing company.
I see. And those that go to the committee to be reviewed, or is the investigator in charge of reviewing that?
So to that end, as Ryan mentioned, it would have to be a dentist or a licensee with the necessary expertise. And there are many sources that could be tasked. Could be investigator, could be the board, could be us. Now, one of the questions that I might propose, since this is something that takes time, energy, and effort, and it's outside of our committee responsibilities, I don't know if a fee of some sort could be generated. That's up to, I would ask Ryan for some direction on that, or Rob. How something like, because they're paying for the service, right? They're paying mm-hmm. for that monitoring service. So maybe that's a way for people to get compensated for their time, regardless of who ends up doing it. I just don't know the answer to that.
Okay. I'm glad that that's being discussed, only because I think it'd be fairly.
Yeah, I think we're sort of hard-pressed to assume that it's just expected of any of us, right?
Yep. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a That's a big task.
It's a relatively new concept that we're promoting, but I do think it sends a really strong message that, listen, your record keeping is so bad that we don't even trust you to be professional enough to correct it without help. And I think that's a strong message.
Correct. Ryan, is that something that just maybe you can bring to the board to have some discussion about? I'm just asking more just for our own curiosities.
Yeah, so how this would work is we would send it to a third party, probably affiliated monitors. They would do the audit, the chart audit over 6 months, and they would periodically provide a report back to this committee and the chief investigator or the board. And all you'd be reviewing is the report. So it wouldn't be a lot of work on the tail end, but the work okay. that they would be paying for would be the monitoring company doing the audit.
Okay. So the report would be just their response to the areas that we asked them to audit. So maybe being more inclusive in that audit versus exclusive would be helpful to us than understanding that. So, you have the listing that Skip had previously put out there, right? So I think we would just duplicate that listing here. Is everybody comfortable with that? I'll take that as a yes. All right, so any further discussion on that proposal? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Odell?
Yes.
Mukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motahari?
Yes.
And Ryan, I'm just confirming that staff has the two fee or charges in there for the failure to respond to subpoena and the restitution. You have that?
I guess speak for the entire staff, but I have it written in my notes.
That's fine. I just want to make sure that gets included. All right. Thank you. So we are now on agenda item 4B6, case number 2022-00335. So what we're looking at here is okay, going up a little bit. So as far as the allegations were concerned, the investigator found that the allegation of inadequate immediate upper denture was not substantiated. And then there was the question of restitution, of which a full refund was provided. In my review of the report, I just found a number of issues with record keeping. So I would just direct the committee to page 2705 and 2706. One of the concerns that I had was, and again, this could be order, so I am open to others' interpretation and input, but if you go down to the chart entry on 11-18-2022. One of the concerns that jumped out at me was that the patient's pulse oximeter was at 92 room air, and there was no response or comment regarding that. So a little disconcerting for me. I also see that on the treatment performed, it says preoperative 2 grams of amoxicillin, 0.25 milligrams of trazolam at 9 a.m., and then the entry obtained verbal and written consent for today's treatment. All questions answered. So just looking at the records, it's the appearance that the patient was medicated and then consent was received, which is obviously inappropriate. On the next, this one was the one that sort of threw me. This is the case. Let me just see here. And I think if I did my math correctly, if I looked at this. Now, this wasn't the one, but my question is, or my concern is, on the previous, because was this the following day? Yeah. So if you go to the previous day visit on this 11-17, so that's on 2706, they essentially approach the patient in the same way, but this time they take their vitals. Now, it's interesting to me here that their O2 was at 98%. I'm assuming they were supplemented with oxygen. I'm just hard-pressed to understand how they could have been at a saturation of 92% on room air and nothing was identified. But the other thing that sort of stood out to me was they had, if I remember correctly, they stopped this procedure because of the patient's blood pressure. And we see that blood pressure entry on that chart note at 177 over 117. While I completely agree with their decision to stop treatment, I had two concerns. One, that they didn't do any continued monitoring to see if that blood pressure came down. But two, I think they had a bad choice of local anesthetics in that they used 3% carbocaine with no epi, and maybe they didn't have adequate anesthesia for extraction of multiple teeth with grafting, and that's why the patient was responding the way that they were. I'm also not exactly sure why they decided on that local anesthetic of choice, whereas the next day, as you can see when you go back up to page 2705, they did 8 cartridges of 4% septicane. And that was an overdose based on the patient's weight. I think my calculations calculated that out to be at least 20 milligrams in excess of what the patient's maximum is for that drug. So I just see some significant issues. Oh, and then I also noted, but I don't see it written down here. I'm trying to see my other note. Oh. Go to page 2693. And, yeah, that's where you get the patient's weight at 174. So that's how I did my calculation there. But then you see all of these areas checked. High blood pressure, low blood pressure, chest pain, angina, irregular heartbeat, history of pneumonia or bronchitis, blood disorder, bruises easily, history of breast cancer, swollen ankles, so kidney trouble, diabetes. Not clear to me that this patient was appropriately worked up. So where I'm going with this is, in deference to what the investigator concluded, I'm seeing a violation of 32.1201.0114. I think you could include 24, not so much other than there's just a deficiency in how records were maintained. So I see this as a clear violation, and I'm open to others' input at this time.
And am I the only one that saw that she was 5'1", 174 pounds? I mean, this is an ASA 3 patient, This is not an ASA 1.
Well, we're going to get to talk about that later for sure. But what is this? So she's, what's her BMI then, Skip? My quickie calculator tells me at 5'1", 174.
The answer's too high.
She's at 32.9. So technically, I mean, morbidly obese absolutely puts you at an ASA 3. You could argue with her other comorbidity she's there, but there's nothing to confirm that. So I don't disagree with you, but I wouldn't say by weight, by BMI alone she's an ASA 3. But I definitely feel like this patient wasn't appropriately worked up. I really don't understand the local anesthetic choice on two different days of treatment. So that's where I'm at. I'm just looking for feedback from the group if you are in agreement or not.
And isn't it weird that the same doctor did the same procedure two entirely different ways on subsequent visits? Like, I don't know about you guys, but I do everything exactly the same. I even tell the same jokes. Like, something's weird about it.
Yeah, it just seems like they didn't know what they were doing. That's the presentation to me, for sure. There's a level of ignorance here, for sure.
Anthony, was it the expanded function dental assistant that delivered the final denture and not the doctor?
I also saw that allegation, but there's nothing to substantiate it.
Yeah.
But it said there were no notes for that day.
Right.
Right. Well, maybe that verifies possibly adding 24 as a violation for poor record keeping. But I was just going off of the consultant's conclusion on that, Umar, and that's why I didn't really pursue it further. I was just more concerned with how this patient was being treated by this dentist, who has fairly significant medical issues that just doesn't seem that they were worked up appropriately. And usually when I see dentist avoiding epi, it's because of a cardiovascular issue. So why did you go to not just using a local anesthetic with epi the following day, but overdosing the patient as well? Other comments?
You answered why. Because the time you did it before, you didn't get them numb enough and they were too anxious, so you had to discontinue. That's why. I mean, it paints a pretty clear picture. It's just a weird picture.
Okay. So I'm proposing a violation of 32.12.01, 01, 14, and 24. Is there a second?
There are seconds.
Okay. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Aswari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay, violation approval is carried. So we're now on recommending action. I'm recommending disciplinary action in the area of 4 hours of record keeping, 4 hours of patient selection and management for sedation, and 4 hours of local anesthesia administration. Discussion or second? Or both?
Anthony.
Yes.
Cynthia, I think in accordance with what Umar said as well, I thought I noticed the same thing too about the having a expanded functions assistant delivering the denture, but not only that, but treating the patient without supervision a number of other days as well.
Correct. And
to that end, do you feel that adding violation 32.12.01, 01, number 17 would be a possibility.
17. Employing. Yeah, I guess my only challenge there is that the investigator didn't seem to be able to come to that conclusion. But at the same point, we're obviously making recommendations to the board. So I have no problem with adding that if you feel that that's appropriate. And Umar obviously does as well. I have no problem putting that in there. You want to add that?
Yes.
Okay, so let's add that so that we'll have.
Can we separate that out as a different vote? Because I'm not sure I want to put it in.
Okay. Yes, we can, because, well, we have to anyways, because we didn't vote on it earlier. So let's manage this right now and then say, is there anything else that anybody else identified other than that? All right, so there is a first by Fukami and second by Imtiaz for a violation of 32.12.01.01.17, right? That what we agreed on? Yes. All right. So roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Farragan?
Yes.
Riddell?
I'm going to say no on this one.
Fukami?
Yes.
Harris?
No.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
No.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
So I think we had three no's, but motion carries. Yes? Yes. I got a tell from Ryan, so that means we are good. So motion carries. So we will add that to the identified violations back to the proposal. In light of that, would you be comfortable, Cynthia or Umar, to also add 3 hours of ethics?
I'm fine with that.
Yep.
All right. So we have a proposal of disciplinary CE in the area of record keeping at 4 hours, patient selection and management of sedation at 4 hours, local anesthesia administration at 4 hours, and ethics at 3 hours. Is there a second to that?
I'll second that.
Second by MTS. Further discussion?
And just for clarification, expanded function dental assistants are not allowed to deliver final prostheses? Or is that allowed?
Generally speaking, I mean, I can't speak to a specific procedure, Umar. Generally speaking, EFTAs can't do irreversible procedures. So one of my thoughts about irreversibility is in delivering a denture, if they had to adjust it, that's irreversible, right? Now they've adjusted it, is the bite off. So I think there has to be some level of supervision, but also in the vein of what we've discussed previously, we are making a recommendation for the board to consider.
Okay.
But I appreciate your comment for sure. Anything else? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Farragan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
MTI?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay, recommendation carries. All right, folks, we are now at agenda item 4B7, case number 2022-00338. No, we dismissed that, right?
Yes, you dismissed that.
Yeah. So we're actually down to agenda item 4B9. My apologies. Having said that, are we good for a break or are we pressing on?
I'm ready for a short break.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, we're about 2 hours into this. I have 3:04. Let's connect back at 3:10. Okay?
Sounds good.
So we'll take a break for 6 minutes.
You're that dedicated, you're not taking a break?
I'm preparing.
So I said you're that dedicated.
Yeah, well, I got my soda pop. That's all I need. It's just flavored water, but I like to call it soda pop.
That was a word that when I moved to Arizona like 45 years ago, I had to get used to the word pop. Never heard it called that before.
What did you grow up with?
Tonic?
No, I called it soda. Tonic.
Just soda.
Yeah. Tonic, that's even like, that's a whole nother generation.
In Boston, they used to call it tonic.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I remember hearing that when I was in school up there. But only of a certain generation.
Yeah, right. Umar.
Well, he's just reporting it. He didn't say he used it.
True.
Since you're here, David, Ryan wanted me just to let you know that for these entities,
yes,
each location is required to register each entity and pay a fee for each entity.
Interesting.
And so they will verify that as you queried.
So it's not listed as it's not listed as an additional practice location. They're separate each one.
Yeah, which I guess at the end of the day, it kind of does make sense.
No, I'm not saying it doesn't make sense. I was just curious if these big corporations can just pay like one little fee and then just keep listing all these offices for a minimal amount versus it's a new entity license.
Better accountability this way, right?
Yeah. And I only brought I only brought that question because of the comment the investigator said, I could never get anyone at the local office. I kept having to call some main number.
But David, I think it's less of a fee because I think they just pay one fee and then you can, I think on the forums, there's an add location option.
Well, no, that's what Tony was saying, that he thinks that Ryan reported just the opposite, that for entities, wow, they have to do each one separately.
They pay the same fee, it looks like, for each entity, Umar.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's on an additional location.
Why? Are you trying to give them a break, Umar?
Yeah, I thought they'd come in as one entity and just add multiple locations, but I guess not.
Yeah, that was my error. Sorry, Dr. Godel. Thank you for clarifying, Dr. Capito.
I'm sorry, Ryan.
That was my error. I appreciated Dr. Caputo's clarification. It is they have to pay for each entity location as an entity.
It actually makes more sense because partial ownership could be different in each location because sometimes the doctors own part of the practice, so they're really separate.
Okay. So, seeing as how we're coming back from a break, let's take a roll call, make sure we have a quorum. And we could say we're coming back from the break at 3:12.
Caputo?
Here.
Asfari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Okami? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Here.
Martin?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, everyone. We actually have 10 more cases to review, so we're doing excellent. This is agenda item 4B9, case number 2022-00344. If you look at the investigator conclusion, the allegations that were presented were not substantiated, and it indicated that Dr. Goff did obtain informed consent in writing and verbally from the patient for the root canal prior to the sedation and verbally from the patient's wife when the patient was under sedation. So, and then there's some other notes there. And this is where I'm kind of coming from in my response to this. Dr. Goff not listing the materials used in the fillings or the shade of the crowns or the crown materials. And let me see if there's anything else related to the issue about the veneer coming off. I think the one thing I was kind of stuck on, too, is trying to verify if they were crowns or veneers. So at any rate, I was sort of in agreement with the consultant. My thought was that this was a good response here would be a letter of concern addressing the importance of appropriate diagnosis and treatment planning for root canal and appropriate type of treatment for restorative crown versus veneer and documentation of materials used, including shade when indicated. So that's kind of where I was at, and I'll open it up to the committee for response.
My notes say exactly the same thing.
I'm in agreement.
My only thought was possibly restitution for the restorative that failed so early.
Um, Well, we don't know if it really failed or just, you know, debonded and just needed to be re-cemented.
Yeah, and I didn't see any issue about restitution. Am I missing that?
No, I just was trying to address the fact that the restorative had such a short shelf life.
Yeah.
And I had a note on this case, look into possible refund patient for the membership plan.
I don't think that's in our jurisdiction.
Yeah, and my thing, you know, I kind of chalk that up, Umar, to that just sort of buyer beware, asking appropriate questions. And I think these are tough ones. I'm sort of inclined to agree with David as well. And then historically, and Ryan, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but if we're looking for restitution, we have to identify a disciplinary action and a violation. Correct, Ryan?
Yes, that's correct. And you shouldn't look for a violation in order to get the restitution.
I don't feel that strongly about it.
Yeah. So if are we fine with that letter of concern? Is there any other thoughts?
I agree.
All right. So we'll take Dr. Dodell's second to the motion for that letter of concern as described. Any other comments? And April, you want me to repeat that, what I said?
I think I got it, but I'll always take a repeat just to make sure.
Okay. So we're recommending a letter of concern to address the importance of appropriate diagnosis and treatment planning for root canal therapy, appropriate documentation of type of treatment, crown versus veneer, and documentation of materials used, including shade when indicated. And that'll give the board something to work with. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Odell?
Yes.
Mukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motahari?
Yes.
Okay. That recommendation carries. We are now on agenda item 4B11, case number 2023-00014MP. So, just want to see what the consultant recommended, if any, before I tell you where I'm at, and then we can have a discussion. So, yeah, I think that's where I kind of came to as well. Let's see where we ended up at the end. Yeah. So they felt that the allegation of the extraction of 16 causing joint issues was substantiated based on how the case was settled. But they also identified right after their conclusion in statutory violation possibilities, maintenance of records as listed there. So one question I do have for Ryan or Rob or anybody on the board or the staff, are we aware that this licensee's license expired in 2022, and is that something that matters to us or not?
It matters, and I'm going to let April jump in here real quick. She might be able to help out a little more to see, tell you exactly where this is at.
Sorry, when I switch screens, I suddenly can't talk. So As long as, and that's something that I'm going to double check right now, but I don't think it's an issue. As long as they were notified of the complaint before the license expired, then we're good to go. But let me just double check on that real quick.
That's fine. I mean, I'm in concurrence with the investigator on the records, and I basically was going to propose a violation of 32.12.01.01.24. I didn't see anything else, but open to discussion on that. Or a second to that.
And Rob could probably speak a little more to this, to what April was saying. And it's 32.32.02.
Yes.
So what she's looking at is to see if we received a complaint before it expired. And if it is, Rob, I think I'll let you take it from here. But since it can't expire,
if there was a complaint open before the expiration of the license and the board received it to begin its investigation, then the license is still in our jurisdiction. But if the license expires and let's say a month later we got a complaint, then we don't have jurisdiction because it's expired. So in this particular case, what April is saying, and April's very good with details, the complaint came in, we had it before expiration, we were beginning our investigation, because we received the complaint, we still have jurisdiction.
Okay.
Okay, so after doing the research, the notice of complaint actually didn't go out until 2023, so officially he was not notified before the expiration. So I think at that point this is outside of our jurisdiction at that point.
Let me check on that. I don't know whether it's the notice or more of that. We received the complaint and we began, so let me check on that fine detail.
Well, at the end of the day, we can make a recommendation, and if it's found that it's unable to be adjudicated because of this, that's something the board would determine at any rate, right, Ryan?
Yeah, but you probably don't want to waste your time doing anything.
Okay, my other question would be, he never renewed, I take it.
That's correct. He never renewed.
So this is currently an unlicensed dentist.
Oh, so he has the, so the statute reads, the license of a health professional who does not renew the certificate or license as prescribed by statute and who has been advised in writing that an investigation is pending at the time. So he wasn't advised that there was a pending complaint. But what it essentially goes on to say that it can't expire and it's suspended. And so I would say that we shouldn't have opened this complaint, and we probably should administratively close it and let the complainant know. Rob, do you disagree?
I'm not disagreeing. I'm just going to look at the statute again to verify. But if the statute, as you're saying, says he has to be notified, then if that's the trigger mechanism, then this should be closed. If it's the board received and the board began the investigation, but notification didn't have to be to the licensee, then that's a different story. But the way you're reading the statute is he has to be notified. So the notification trigger.
And I think the other trigger here is that this was a malpractice. So this wasn't a situation, right? So this wasn't a board patient complaint.
Well, it doesn't matter whether it's a board or patient or even a malpractice. It's just as long as we get notification and we notify them, then that is the hinge point or the trigger point.
Gotcha. All right. Do you guys want to just consider that while we move on? Or what do you think, Ryan? Do we just close it?
Yeah, I think that this is the statute that I just read. I think that the committee shouldn't take any more time and basically direct staff to administratively close it.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah, you are
all right,
correct.
So that puts us.
Yeah, you're correct, Ryan, who has been advised in writing that investigation is pending. So that's the trigger point. He is correct, Ryan's correct.
All right. So we will administratively close agenda item 4B11, case number 2023-00014-MP. We are now on agenda item 4B12, case number 2023-00021. So, in looking at the consultant report, so on page 3094, investigator's conclusion. Allegation, this is regarding the paresthesia following local anesthesia administration with an inferior alveolar nerve block was substantiated. Also identified by the investigator that Dr. Walia did not treat the patient's paresthesia or refer to a specialist that could. There was a comment about the choice of antibiotics that were prescribed. The clinical records, this one was another area that was identified. Clinical records provided to the patient at their request to the prior to the dental board complaint is not the same as what Dr. Walia provided to the investigator. They also did not receive all their dental records when requested, and poor record keeping was identified as well. And there was a total amount paid of $2,222.40, as well as what the insurance paid. And so starting there, what I have here is a violation of 32.12.01.01, 12, 14, and 24. And just to identify what 12 is, that's knowingly making any false or fraudulent statement, written or oral, in connection with the practice of dentistry. And I'm specifically referring to the change in what was provided by the dentist in their records, as if there was a form of cover-up. And that's kind of why I included 12. So we'll start there. Discussion.
Since when are we no longer allowed to use clindamycin? I thought that was an overreach, a bizarre addition.
I didn't really address that one, and that's why I didn't. I just mentioned it, but I didn't address it in my where I'm at as far as a recommendation.
To be clear, I completely disagree with that. But there is a clear-cut case of failure to refer here. I mean, at a bare minimum, he should have elevated it. Even though this, you know, paresthesia is a known complication to every intraoral injection, still should have been elevated.
Right. I think it was the management more than the complication, is, and that's what I hear you saying as well.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah,
I agree.
Agreed.
Is there, and Ryan, you can maybe help out on this. Is have you seen 12 used as a violation in the past? And I mean, I've not, so I'm just kind of asking the question more just because of my lack of. But I do feel as though there was a intention to deceive or misrepresent to the patient based on how the dentist responded to the patient with records and then to the board with records. That tells me there was an intentional change. That's why I'm there.
So, and for, since you asked, I'll say that I haven't seen 12 used often, but knowingly, and Rob can probably address this better than me, knowingly is a hard threshold to prove. So if you had to go to a hearing on just 12, I would recommend not that unless you had something substantive to say that they knowingly, because they can mistakenly or whatever, but knowingly is a hard threshold to prove.
Right. That's what I was, that's where I was stuck on, and that's why I'm asking.
Agree with Ryan. Knowingly is a very high threshold. You have to be able to have documents or conversations that were recorded that show the state of mind of the individual. The person could say, I may have been negligent, I wasn't aware of this, or it was a mistake. And that could be, you know, was it a negligent mistake or is it a good faith mistake where everything that could have occurred did occur and it was just a bad outcome? But as Ryan says, knowingly is a very high standard.
I appreciate that. So I'm going to adjust my proposal of violations to 32, 1201, 01, 14, and 24. So is there a further discussion or a second?
Harris seconds.
Okay. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami? Harris?
Yes.
Impias?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motohari?
Yes.
So I am proposing for action disciplinary, CE, 4 hours of record keeping, 3 hours of ethics, and 6 months of chart auditing as previously described, 30% of all patient charts for areas that we've listed and identified. Comments or second?
Second, Berrigan.
Berrigan, further discussion.
Anthony, can you repeat the CE choices?
Yes, absolutely. I said, I proposed, probably better, 4 hours of record keeping, 3 hours of ethics.
I agree.
I was going to either add or substitute complications, management of complications.
I say add. What kind of complications are we? Oh, you mean like anesthesia complications?
You know, or I mean, the issue here was that he didn't make the referral when.
I'm fine with that.
Yep.
So management of local anesthesia complications, 3 hours.
Yep.
Okay, so we'll add that to that list. I think that's fine. And I keep meaning to say this, but just so everybody knows, we've kind of mentioned this off and on, but any recommendations that we make for CE that get approved or substantiated by the board is always in addition to what the requirements are for licensure maintenance. So it's not something they can do as a substitute. It's in addition to. I'm just making sure everybody's aware of that. Further discussion. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Impias?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motohari?
Yes.
Okay. That recommendation carries to include the added CE for local anesthesia complication management. So we are now on agenda item 4B15, case number 2023-00.
Has raised her hand. I think she has a question about the previous case.
Oh, my bad. Go ahead. Who raised their hand? Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Yasmin.
Quick question to clarify. The continuing education, is it for disciplinary action?
Yes, it is.
Okay, thank you.
No, you bet. Thank you. Okay. All right. Back to where we're at. So, case number 2023-00040. And going to the notes. So we're seeing in the consultant report. So bottom of page 3361, allegation one about the denture not being functional is substantiated. Allegation two about patient abandonment is not substantiated. There was further comment by the investigator about why the denture was not functional, including poor final impression, poor occlusion, flange overextension, and lack of follow-up care and instructions. It wasn't substantiated who actually did the final impression, and there was no patient abandonment. They did get the patient was, there was a refund for the patient. And apparently the patient had indicated that they wanted the complainant probably better, wanted the case dropped and dismissed. Based on those comments, I am identifying a violation of 32.12.01.01.14. So, second discussion or both.
I'd just like to throw out, in my bid to try to rid the world of speculation in these reports, the reason that this denture failed was described as could be a whole bunch of things, but I don't think there's any clear documentation why this denture was not accepted by the patient. I think the consultant was speculating. And I just would caution us that, we've got a patient that feels like they've been made whole. We've got a denture that wasn't received well. I don't think we have a whole lot more concrete evidence of anything, as far as wrongdoing here. I was leaning towards dismissing this.
Okay.
I agree. I had letter of concern or dismissal for this one.
Okay. So going with dismissal, we have a motion for dismissal by Harris, second by Fukami. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay. Roll call.
Caputo?
No.
Asfari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
MTS?
Is that it?
Yes, sorry.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
And Motohari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. So recommendation for dismissal on that case. Now puts us to agenda item 4B16, case number 2023-00047. on this report. We see that allegation that tooth number 30 was wrongfully broken to a non-savable state when removing tooth number 32 is substantiated. And there was additional comments that there was no evidence to support that tooth number 30 had any type of fracture that would have caused the type of damage that occurred during the extraction. So I also had some other notes on this, but just starting there, I am proposing violation of 32.12.01.01, 14, and 24. Second, discussion.
Discussion.
Or something else. Second by Dodell.
Well, no, no, said discussion by Dodell.
Oh, discussion. Go ahead.
So one thing I had a problem with this is how was it determined that there was no problems with number 30? The dentist said in the notes, it said something about that the surgeon wanted to take a panel that day, but the panel machine was down. So he accepted a panel from the patient that the patient brought in. But when I look at the image, there is no date on that image of when that image was taken. So if we're guessing that number 30 was not having some previous problem based on a radiograph, we don't know if it's 1 year old or 5 years old. How do we know that number 30 didn't have a predisposing condition to have it fractured?
Well, I think the way I read the record, they were pretty thorough in their workup. I mean, they even go to the point of documenting a timeout, verifying procedure and everything. And they were clear to say that there was nothing wrong. What I'm struggling with, David, I mean, and you can help me here, and yep, anyone else can help me here, but I'm hard pressed to understand. I mean, I don't have tremendous experience with extractions, but I'm hard pressed to understand how you could damage a tooth two teeth away and not the tooth adjacent to the tooth you're extracting.
And I don't understand that either. That's why I'm kind of suspicious that they might, I mean, Skip's the surgeon here. He can tell us how this could have happened, but I've done enough extractions in my career. I don't remember ever damaging anything or even thinking about damaging thing not that was adjacent.
Short of the dim mock, which probably none of you will recognize, I don't think it's possible or likely. So I found this troubling. If 31 and 30 were broken, I'd find it a lot more believable than just 30. But I don't have a better explanation either.
And that's why when I referred to the radiograph, I went to the radiograph saying, well, let me see what this tooth looked like pre fracture, and there's no date on it, so which tells me I don't know if that's really a good judging of the condition. Yes, that maybe 30 was predisposed from something else.
I noticed that too, and I the only thought I had was that perhaps he grabbed the tooth with the wrong tooth with the forceps before he grabbed the right one. I can imagine that, but other than that, I can't see this happening.
That's the same thought I had, was that they started extracting the wrong tooth.
But again, that's speculation, right? So we got to be a little
correct.
Careful.
Absolutely.
Right. Skip, you can't elevate off 30 to get 32?
Well, I can't. No.
So here's what I'm seeing. When I look at the records, I'm seeing that there seems to be the practice of speed in this particular situation. It's all about how fast they can cycle these patients through. And I think that's how the practice is set up. And I'm going to identify that a little bit further as I bring up some other areas that I identified that are of concern. And so I think that lends itself to this idea of moving a little bit too fast, that you get disoriented and you make mistakes. I think a mistake was made here. I don't know that we need to absolutely have records. We know, what we do know is there was nothing wrong with that tooth when the patient presented for treatment, and there was something wrong with it afterwards. And I think based on that and understanding that the likelihood of damaging, and again, the other thing, sort of to your point, David, is the dentist identified that there was nothing wrong with the tooth because their response was it happened during the extraction process. So I think we can conclude appropriately that this tooth was fine pre-extraction and it wasn't post-extraction. And that's the issue. And I think it's because this practice functions on how fast it can cycle these patients through. So Mia, did you have something to say? I'm sorry.
Oh, I just was going to say, based on the occlusion between 3 and 30, could there have been possibility of microfractures in the distal part of that number 30 to begin with? But there's no notes about that, so.
Right. And I think we're all understanding there's some possibility to that, but I think it's accepted that the tooth was fine pre-extraction and it wasn't post-extraction. So I'm going to dive into these notes a little bit, particularly since Dr. Harris brought this up earlier. But if you guys go to page 3556, you see that this patient had a BMI of 42.9, which clearly makes her, just by that alone, ASA 3 classification. There's also identified marijuana use daily and alcohol every few days, though the amount was not verified. Just under that, you see, correlating with the BMI, you have a patient who's 5'4", 250 pounds. Okay. As you go down into the actual treatment dates, and this is where I had some level of concern. So now on page 3562, they have the pre-anesthetic assessment sedation log. They identify here that the patient over in physical assessment, now it wasn't there. It was another location. It might have been on the anesthesia record. Oh, there, no, it's at the bottom. I'm sorry. ASA status 2, which would have been incorrect based on what we just discussed. So I think there was an inappropriate assessment of this patient for this procedure. And then if you go down to the next page, 3563, the actual record, this is where I'm kind of going at. So they start a procedure at 2:22 and they're finished 20 minutes later. To me, that's a pretty fast time sequence to get a patient moderately sedated, allow that moderate sedation to be titrated to effect, allow your local anesthesia to be administered and to effect, extract the tooth, and then complete the procedure. It also is disconcerting to me that you see the anesthesia stop time as 2:43, and then on the right side of the page towards the bottom, you see time of release at 2:47. So basically, they recovered that patient in 4 minutes, which I find to be inappropriate, even from a moderate sedation standpoint. And it also troubles me that if you look at the middle of the record where it talks about agents, one, they have no time listed, so you're only kind of going off of what time they started, but in the top section where it says time, there's nothing listed. They gave this patient 5 milligrams of midazolam and 100 micrograms of fentanyl in an 8-minute period of time. Even to dose your midazolam appropriately from a sedation standpoint, they should have waited to dose the fentanyl until they had the appropriate titrated response of the midazolam. But the way the record reads, they gave the fentanyl at the same time they gave the midazolam, which would be an inappropriate dosing approach for moderate sedation. And then if they would have dosed the midazolam at those 2-minute intervals, they would have been to about 228 to see if they had appropriate sedation with the midazolam, but then by that time they were giving a second dose of the fentanyl. But if you look at the procedure start time, they started the procedure 2 minutes after they apparently were dosing their midazolam. I'm of the position that they just bolus the midazolam at 5 milligrams and the fentanyl at 50 micrograms, which I think is unsafe for a patient with a BMI of 43. And I also find it disconcerting that they have no fluids listed. So it leads me to believe they didn't actually have an IV in place, but they just mainlined the drugs. And had this patient had a complication, particularly at that size, they could have struggled finding an IV subsequently. But I think it was a very poor sedation management event. And because of the complication with the extraction, the patient came back and had that tooth extract, the broken tooth extracted. This time the patient saw a CRNA. And similarly, their approach was the same. So if you go down to page 3569, you see the same kind of workup. No, this time though, no allergies are listed. So that's a miss on their assessment because previously there were allergies listed. So to me, that's just not paying attention and doing a appropriate workup. Again, patients identified as an ASA2, scheduled for what's called moderate sedation. But then you go down to the log. Now, if we're truly doing moderate sedation, and I realize this is a different provider doing the moderate sedation, but the dentist is still responsible for this procedure. And as a moderately sedation trained dentist is understanding. So you see 5 milligrams of midazolam given at 10:02 and another 5 given 3 minutes later. I think that's inappropriate, again, for moderate sedation. Similarly, the bolus doses of fentanyl are given within a minute of the bolus doses of midazolam, and the patients also administered Presidex, not at a significantly high dose, but certainly will potentiate the length of sedation, and that's what's disconcerting to me. So you see an anesthesia start time at 9:57. An anesthesia stop time of 10:19 and a discharge time of 10:25. So again, it goes to my point. I think they're moving these patients through way too fast. I think it increases the chance for mistakes and it's a safety concern. I think that that's how this tooth broke, is they were trying to get through faster than they should have. So I see a lot of issue here and I think it's worth considering. And that's why I'm identifying, the violations that I mentioned, or if I didn't mention, I think I did, of 32, 12, 01, 01, 14, and 24. So that's where I'm at on that. Certainly open for discussion further by the committee.
Anthony, I had a question. It said the patient's insurance was Mercy Care, but they paid a fee of $475. Is that, I thought that's not allowed.
Well, if the patient does have a Medicaid plan, the only thing that would have been allowed is if they got a denial from Mercy Care.
Okay.
So if, as long as they have a denial that's documented, they can present that fee to the patient.
Okay.
You can charge as long as the service is denied. The procedure code is denied, you can charge the patient for it. You just have to inform them. It would be more that if it was a covered service and they charged additional for the procedure to make up for whatever the difference in compensation would be.
Just to throw this out there, 10 milligrams of Versed for a gal like this 3 minutes apart is malpractice. I'm not so sure I'm against the 5 milligrams of Versed as a bolus, but 10 milligrams within 2 minutes or 3 minutes is a huge dose for a patient like that. And the inconsistencies in all of this are crazy, and the recovery times are crazy. And I agree with pretty much everything you said, except maybe the 5 milligram bolus.
The only thing on that, Skip, I would tell you is that may be fine for you and I, but this is a dentist that has a 1302 permit. So they should be titrating that drug to effect.
Fair enough. Yep.
And that's how any training program presents it.
Is this an oral surgeon, wisdom tooth guys?
No, they're general dentists.
But they say they're oral surgeons.
I mean, sometimes. Okay, a hearing wisdom tooth guys gives me an oral surgery vibe.
Well, that's what they want you to have, right?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's not something that's wrong, as long as they're not telling the patients they're oral surgeons. But at any rate, okay, so just to keep us on track, is there a second to that violation of 32-12-01, 01, 14, and 24.
I'll second.
Second, Fukami. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Liddell?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay. The violation approval carries. So as far as action, I'm proposing disciplinary. I have a real strong concern that this is an unsafe practice. I'm proposing 4 hours of diagnosis and treatment planning, 4 hours in extractions and management of complications, 4 hours of sedation management, monitoring, and records, with suspension of the 1302 permit until the sedation CE is completed. And while I don't have a number, I'm recommending restitution that would be appropriate to replace and restore tooth number 30. So, discussion. Or second. Or other.
Anthony, did you mention ethics?
I did not, but I'm happy to add that. 3 hours of ethics?
Yes.
Okay.
Dr. Cook, this is Deb. I didn't think we could basically pay for subsequent treatment, because she went ahead and this tooth, they extracted the tooth, and then she's asking to get that redone. So I don't know where we're at on that to be able to.
It's a recommendation that I would be willing to let the board decide how to deal with it, Deb, but I do think that this tooth was unnecessarily lost. And I think that the reason why she opted for extraction, she was in a lot of pain and discomfort, and they really weren't providing her with any supportive assistance. You know, they just kept telling her, go talk to your general dentist, which I think is one of the challenges with these types of entities or practices, where they're trying to provide a limited scope of care and they don't want to deal with anything outside of that. But I do think there's a responsibility here, and I'm comfortable with at least making that recommendation to the board and letting them determine how to proceed.
This is Ryan. Deb's correct. I wouldn't make a recommendation that goes against what the law allows, so I would recommend if you want to recommend restitution, that's okay, but I wouldn't recommend, this is what's called a punitive damage, and you can't recommend that.
Good luck, Brian.
Fair enough.
This is Sukami. Just I'm in 100% agreement with the comments he made about the sedation records and approach to the sedation administration process. For me, the number one concern was actually the recovery process and lack of charting as to the whether the patient was discharge ready, et cetera. And so to that end, while this, since this wasn't actually a sedation adverse outcome, much like the other case, I'm not sure that the suspension of the 1302 permit at this time would be of assistance. Kind of like with the other situation, this person has probably been practicing with that permit since then, and perhaps instead, what we could recommend would be an audit of records, like has been recommended a lot in this particular committee meeting, what 6-month audit, et cetera, but specifically to review sedation records such as these with the intent of reviewing how the medications are being administered and as well what the recovery time is going to be for some of those.
So the only challenge I have there is that I don't see those two cases as the same. The first case that you're mentioning was an adverse outcome that was reported. This, I think, is an adverse outcome waiting to happen, and there's no identification that we just don't know if this dentist is continuing to get lucky and are going to have a problem. So I actually don't have an issue with the recommendation of auditing. I think that's an added layer, but I think suspending them is a protection to the public, given that this was identified and we appreciate that it's not appropriate. And I think to allow it to continue is not appropriate. And my concern is, what is auditing going to do? Auditing is only going to confirm potentially what we already know. It's not going to prevent something from occurring. By suspending their permit, we are immediately disallowing them from potentially hurting a patient. So I would disagree with the comparison, and I'm pretty comfortable making the recommendation to include suspension of their permit. So, but I hear what you're saying. I don't see that it's the same scenario with the previous case. To the point about restitution, I'm fine with that. I feel as though this patient unnecessarily lost that tooth. I feel like we have an opportunity to make them whole. That's one way to do it. The law doesn't allow us to do that. I get it. I can accept that. I feel like that's disappointing that that was their end result based on the level of care that they are receiving from this office. So I get it. I'm fine with removing restitution, but I would like to have us at least decide about, I would like the committee to decide about suspension. I'm strongly for suspension.
The law would allow us to get restitution for the tooth that was extracted poorly. I think destroying a tooth, two teeth over is a pretty good definition of poorly done services. So why don't we recommend restitution for the amounts you paid for the extractions?
So my thing is stopping the 1302 permit. But Anthony, you mentioned they have a nurse anesthetist or somebody. So how's the model going to change? You're just taking away the permit from the dentist. He's just going to have the.
They can't work.
He's just going to have.
They can't work with the.
Oh, I see.
Their permit allows them to work with ARNA.
Okay, gotcha. So if you take the
by suspending their permit, and that's another reason for me for doing it.
Yeah, that
is,
makes sense.
We're also disallowing them from having others come in and potentially harm their patients.
Yeah, that makes
and
sense.
Again, that's why I just see this. I don't see the comparison with the other case at all. And that's why I'm strongly in support of the suspension.
Anthony, I second your opinion.
Okay, so.
Comment actually about the chart audits. If we recommend that the chart audits occur after the CE, couldn't we be looking to see if behavior has changed as a result of the CE through those chart audits?
Sure. Yeah, no, I'm fine with adding that. If we're comfortable adding chart audits to include audits of any sedation records, and as you said, I think that's a great way to put it, Deb, is that's after their CE is all completed. I think that's a great idea.
So let's make a motion.
All right. So I would propose that we do, going back to what I had spoken about earlier, disciplinary action to include 4 hours of diagnosis and treatment planning, 4 hours of extractions and management of complications, 4 hours of sedation management, monitoring, and records with suspension of 1302 until sedation CE is completed. Following completion of all CE, chart auditing for 6 months to include auditing of sedation records. To cover 40% of all patient charts for the areas previously listed, as well as the inclusion of sedation, any and all sedation records, as well as restitution for the extraction, the cost of the extraction for 32 and 30. Is that what I heard?
Yes. Harris seconds.
Okay.
Can I ask a question? Okay. Restitution on 32? Did I misunderstand that?
No, the comment was that because of how poorly 32 is extracted, they ended up damaging 30.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. That's what we're here for. All right. Well, we have a second. Go ahead.
On restitution, is that the Mercy Care? Well, was that the access fee? Is that going to be reimbursed to the patient?
We don't know that that was an access fee or not, Cynthia. I think regardless, if the restitution would go back to who the payer was, I would indicate. But we have no indication that that was an access situation or not. I'm fairly certain it wasn't, because generally speaking, access doesn't cover for adults.
Got it. Thanks. Okay, and I'm fine with the added chart auditing. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think the important comment here for staff is that we want the chart auditing to occur after the CE is completed, because up until that time, at least with the sedation permit, it'll be suspended. All right, roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Lukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay, we are now on, and so that recommendation carries. We are now on agenda item 4B17, case number 2023-00050. And according to the consultant report, we have An allegation of inadequate bridge due to poor function and short lifespan is substantiated with some additional explanation below that. This is on page 3643. And it's also noted that Dr. Bingham has given the patient and Delta Dental a full refund. There was also a comment about during Dr. Bingham being on maternity leave, the bridge that was just recently fabricated came out along with the buildup. And the covering dentist made a diagnosis to remake the bridge. And therefore, that covering dentist might be responsible for the later bridge failure. So that's for our consideration. With that and other review, I am proposing violation of 32, 1201, 01, 14, and 24. Discussion, second, other.
Harris seconds.
Okay. Further discussion. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay. As far as action, I'm proposing disciplinary action to include 4 hours in record keeping and 4 hours of diagnosis and treatment planning for root canal therapy. Second, discussion, other.
Adam Bridge as well. No?
I'm fine with that. So how much in Crown and Bridge?
Did you have 4 hours? I was going to say 4 hours total treatment planning to be Crown and Bridge and I guess endo too. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure endo.
Yep.
Anybody else? David? Or is that just your phone?
Just my phone, sorry.
No, yeah, no problem. Mia?
No, I agree with diagnosis.
Is it safe to say that no root canal should be done without a rubber dam in place?
Yes, absolutely.
And any violation of that just risks a failure of that root canal, correct?
Yes, and safety of the patient.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Okay, so just to review, we're talking about, and Cynthia, help me on this a little bit. So I just said 4 hours of diagnosis and treatment planning, but you just want to say in Crown and Bridge, is that?
I think you had an addendum to make sure it included endo. I just wanted to make sure it included Crown and Bridge.
Oh, no, I already had endo. You know what I did? You know what? You're correct. I had 4 hours of record keeping and then 4 hours of diagnosis and treatment planning for root canal therapy. You want to include 4 hours for diagnosis and treatment planning in Crown and Bridge.
Correct.
And I'm fine with that. I appreciate that. Thank you. Okay, yes. Further discussion. So we'll have a second on that by Fukami to include the Crown and Bridge. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Awesome. Okay, so that recommendation carries. So we are now on agenda item 4B19, case number 2023-00085. Okay, so what we're seeing in the consultant report, starting on page 3753, failure to maintain records is substantiated. Overdose of local anesthetic administration during treatment is substantiated. Failure to supervise dental assistant is not substantiated. So starting there, as well as review of the other records provided, I am proposing a violation of 32.12.01.01.14 and 24. Is there a second?
Just for discussion for a moment. I mean, I know that the consultant went off on local use and felt like the assistants doing care was unsubstantiated, but I still feel like this is something that needs to be investigated. I left feeling like this wasn't investigated to the point where I was sure that the dentist that was making these allegations, they seemed like very credible allegations, and I just felt like I was left wondering if they weren't in fact true, despite what the investigator said.
I agree with you, and I was going to sort of address that in more detail when we get to the action.
Okay. I mean, I'm not trying to speculate. You know, I'm against that. But, boy, it just sure did strike me as.
No. I'm in agreement there as well, which is why I just starting with at least a violation of those two statutes.
Then I second you. Harrison.
Unless you think there's. Okay. Second to that. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
So using Skip's comments as a segue, I am proposing a disciplinary action to include 4 hours of CE in record keeping, 3 hours in ethics, and 6 months of chart auditing. And I would propose 30% of all charts to include the list previously identified as our recommendation for chart auditing.
If I could amend and make it 50% with special attention paid to provider documentation for every appointment, I'd like to see records that show which provider is seeing a patient every time they're seen.
Okay. So to include that, and I'm fine with 50%, and to include that addition of provider documentation as listed is fair to me. Other comments?
I just like the earlier case when I think this issue came up again, I think it's the same concern. It doesn't, it certainly seems like there are unlicensed persons who are unsupervised during the course of this patient's care and others as well. So, I mean, are we going to add the 120101 number 17 as well at this point as a separate measure?
I guess I'm to the same position of just trying to figure out where that's at, and I'm hopeful that that's where the chart auditing will come in on this kind of situation based on the additional provision that Skip added. I sure do hear you, Cynthia, but I'm also willing to entertain that as a motion if you want to. So you tell me how you want to do that.
So is the audit that we are discussing here what? Investigatory audit, or is it part of the? Do you see what I'm saying? Yes.
It's an audit that would be inclusive. So it'd be the board will determine when to initiate that audit. It doesn't have to. It's not contingent on CE completion. What we're going to be auditing, in addition to the listing that we identified previously, is also provider documentation, as Skip had explained. To really address what you're saying is to identify who specifically is involved with these procedures. and send that message of identifying that as part of the licensee's responsibility and role.
Cynthia, I completely agree with you, but I might make the comment that does it matter whether it's investigative or punitive? Either way, it's going to happen, and it's going to necessitate a modification of behavior if that behavior is occurring. And if it's not occurring, it won't be that onerous of a responsibility to provide it.
I guess I was looking more at what is the follow-up process for this going to be. The other types of audits that we were talking about, it seems to be that runs its course and then it's done. Versus, I think this one, the question is whether it was, will it be brought back for? Got it.
Yeah, and I don't think that's accurate though. So going off of what Ryan had mentioned, Cynthia, and part of this is new, right? But the auditing company is going to provide a report, and then that report will get reviewed, and then we can identify from there if further action. So that audit provides us with the opportunity to take further action if it's merited on any of the audits that we've recommended.
Okay.
Yeah. So the audit doesn't just end with the audit report.
I think that's where I'm just trying to see where the loop's going to close.
Yeah, the loop will close with the review of the report and identifying that either further action needs to be taken or no further action needs to be taken.
Okay. In which case, can we add the powers of either jurisprudence or ethics to that list of CE?
We did. Ethics.
Thanks.
Ethics is in there.
Thank you.
For sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. All right, so just from a staff perspective, were we clear on what's being required for the chart auditing service?
I'm clear, but I would refer to April.
Yeah, I got
April,
it.
April, the only difference, you got it?
Yes.
Okay, fair enough. All right, so understanding that and that we are just to review, recommending disciplinary CE in the area of record keeping at 4 hours, ethics at 3 hours. Okay, and then the chart auditing as we delineated. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Aswari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
MTS? MTS?
Yes.
Kempis?
Yes. Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay, so that recommendation carries. We are now on agenda item 4B20, case number 2023-00091. Okay, consultant report. So what we see here from the investigator's conclusion was that allegation one of just wanting to fix tooth number 30 was not substantiated, but in the process there was this identification of maintenance of records and numerous deficiencies. So taking that into consideration as well as the rest of the record, I am proposing a violation of 32-1201-24. Second, further discussion, other.
Second.
Second, Dodell. Other comments? Roll call.
I have to admit, I did not see I didn't think I escalated this to a point of violation. I thought this would be a letter of concern.
I guess
is that right?
Correct. Right. The issue I saw is the identification of not having complete records. So it's a records issue for me, and that's why I just said 24, Cynthia, which is the failure to maintain records. But having said that, if you don't see the records deficiency to rise to the level of a violation, is that what I hear you saying?
Yes.
What about non-disciplinary?
That will eventually be my proposal. I'm just not there yet. I was looking at a non-disciplinary action, but I'm also hearing a recommendation for a letter of concern. So let's start there. Is there a second for considering a letter of concern?
I second that.
Okay. So to start there, and then we can decide what we'll put into this letter, let's just take a roll call on a letter of Ryan.
Okay, sorry to interrupt the deliberation, but I got Dr. Caputo and then Dr. Dodell had the motion and a second for the violation, and then we got off on a topic of letter of concern. You never voted on that violation. Did you want to vote on that, or are you scratching that and just saying there's no violation, we're going to a letter of concern?
No, we're scratching that because we're going to see if the committee is more inclined for a letter of concern.
Thanks.
I just want to see where this motion goes to make it better. So we're putting that in a temporary hold, or possibly a defeat, depending on how this vote comes out.
Right.
So I'm going with the motion by Fukami for a letter of concern, second by Motihari. As I said, we can discuss what to put in that letter pending the outcome of the vote. So let's do a roll call on letter of concern.
Caputo?
No.
Aswari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Adele?
No.
Fukami?
Yes.
Harris?
No.
MTS? MTS?
No.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Where'd we end up?
Passes 6-4.
Okay, so going to a letter of concern, what would you like to see in that letter? Let's refer to the maker and the seconder.
Record keeping, need to ensure that all documentation is complete, including the medical history, despite the doctor no longer being at the practice.
Including a periodontal evaluation?
Yes. Looking here.
I didn't see any perio probing at all, unless I'm missing it.
Okay, so we're just trying to provide some guidance, right? So we need to put something together here. What would we like to see in that letter? I heard record keeping. I don't know what that, if we want to say, basically we want to give them some feeling for the content of the letter, right? Anyone? Bueller?
I would say that they need to make sure that all the documentation is complete. If they have to have ensured that even if it is an emergency visit, that they need to have a complete health history, that they're, if periprobing is what's required at that time, then that's what they should do.
So ensure complete documentation for any type of dental visit.
Sure.
And if I could, be respectful of patient's time and emotional status. I think the reason I voted no was because the complaint talked a lot about there being a lack of empathy and about a child that was being, you know, treated poorly and frustrated, and I think that's the part that bothered me. So something in the letter about, you know, watching patient mental state and empathy, I think would be appropriate.
Okay. Anything else? Someone said something about perio charting, or was that included with your comment, Cynthia, about just complete records? Are you comfortable with that, I guess I should say?
I am comfortable with that.
Okay.
I was the one that brought up perio charting because I didn't see any.
Yeah, sure.
It is present on page 4351.
The perio charting?
Yeah.
My bad, I missed it. I kept going through it trying to find it.
So included or not included?
Not included, I'll withdraw.
Okay, that's fine. There was like also comments about not recording local anesthesia. There are a lot of records deficiencies. But if you guys are comfortable with that, April, do you feel like you have a flavor of what needs to go into that letter of concern, or at least what we're recommending?
Yes, I do. Thank you.
Okay. So we can at least go from there. All right. So that is good. Thank you. So, we are now, so we've basically didn't do anything with the motion for violation, so it can just go away. We are now on agenda item 4B21, case number 2023-00092. And looking at that one. So we have a number of allegations, 8. Of the 8, allegation number 1, 7 to 8 months of crown issues and tooth pain with tooth number 30 was not substantiated. Treatment of the patient by the doctor and staff, it was actually against a different doctor. Refund, the patient did receive a refund, allegation 3. Wanting money to cover for specialist fee and poor work done on that tooth, not within Bodex purview. Allegation 5, Better Business Bureau, not within our purview. Allegation 6, another fee restitution issue, and that was refunded. Injection went bad, and how the injection went, there was not the date that the doctor, the licensee, saw the patient and referred to another doctor for crown lengthening due to poor work, and the referral was made by a different doctor, not this doctor. So basically the conclusion being that the licensee didn't have a chance to correct the issue with 30, and any subsequent work done on 30 isn't the responsibility of the licensee. So the issue that came up is basically maintenance of records, and similar issue for me is what I focused on as well, though I also saw issues with the treatment planning and restoration of the restorative stuff. I was sort of in deference to the consultant. So I'm proposing a violation of 32, 12, 01, 01, 14, and 24. So is there other comments, further discussion, or second?
Harris seconds.
Okay. So as we are on to the violation with a first and a second, all we're doing, just to kind of keep us organized here, I'm fine if anybody on the committee feels otherwise. Let's just see how a vote turns out, and then we won't get our process sort of confused. So we'll just try to keep on track there. So if you are supportive of the motion, vote for it. If you're not, vote against it. So hearing that, roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Lodell?
Yes.
Lukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Antias?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay. So the violation approval carries. So I am proposing non-disciplinary CE, 4 hours of record keeping, and 4 hours of restorative diagnosis and treatment planning and restoration. So diagnosis, treatment planning, and restoration of restorative procedures. Second, discussion, other.
Could we be specific to fixed prosthetics, you know, crowns? Because I thought even though the provider didn't have the chance to remedy the situation, just the initial work did not look like it was up to snuff.
Yeah, so usually single crowns are included as restorative. Well, typically when we're talking about fixed, we're talking about multiple units and restoration of edentulous spaces, which is why I said restorative. That address what you were saying, Deb, or were you thinking something else?
No, yeah, no, that's fine.
Okay.
I'm in agreement. I'll second that.
Okay. So second by Berrigan for the proposal of
yes.
Non-disciplinary CE, 4 hours of record keeping, 4 hours of diagnosis, treatment planning, and restoration of restorative treatment. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Lukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay, recommendation carries. We are now on agenda item 4B22. Case number 2023-00095. I'm going to bring the case up, but David, I'm going to turn it over to you since you pulled it.
Oh, let me unmute myself. So the reason I recommended pulling this is I was very concerned that the Crown and Bridge treatment proceeded even though there was diagnosed periodontal issues. The dentist recognized and made a treatment plan for it, but still went ahead. And to me, that's not excusable, that just because the patient doesn't want to do something doesn't mean you do it. And this should have been either restored as a kind of a carries control case or temporary restorations to stabilize the patient, but it should not have gone to final restorations. So that's where I have a problem with it, that he proceeded
right.
with Crown and Bridge when there was no resolution to a recognized periodontal problem.
Right. So my conflict that you identified, and so I'm certainly willing to pursue the discussion because I appreciate what you're saying, but what do you do? So if the patient denies that treatment, and you documented that they've denied it, do you tell the patient, sorry, we're just not going to do it? And is that protecting the public or that particular patient? I guess that's what I'm trying to wrap my head around because I don't disagree with you.
So to me, this patient either should have been denied treatment, i.e. this is not I would personally treat a patient like this. I would have basically said, if you're not going to follow the recommendations, which I feel are absolutely necessary, then I don't treat you. Or the alternative, looking at just the photos and everything, this patient could have easily been treated as just trying to stabilize with temporary restorations. So you could have made long-term provisional crowns to stabilize them, et cetera, but this definitely shouldn't have gone to finalize crown and bridge.
Okay. Do you have a motion?
So, the violation, I don't have my book in front of me, so it'd be the violation for that we always use for standard of care not being met.
14.
32-12-01-14. Yeah, so that's...
Possibly, I mean, maybe along those lines, maybe some sort of non-disciplinary letter of concern. I mean, please forgive me. I live in a little different world, but patients don't do what I tell them to do every day, and I still have to treat them. And so maybe it doesn't rise to the level of, disciplinary action.
I would disagree. Skip, I'm not saying you don't have to. This could have been treated with stabilizing type of temporary restorations because the patient's mouth was falling apart. I think it's wrong to go ahead with. So give the example. If this patient had 50% bone loss on those teeth, 10 millimeter pockets, which he did in this case did, and you saw crown and bridge on it, I don't think you would have said the crown and bridge should have been done. You would have said, why wasn't the perio treatment resolved first? To me, that's the same thing.
I would have said that, but I also work in a world where people don't let me do what I tell them to do often.
No, I understand that. But
okay.
To me,
I think we got the flavor. So let's do. So this is how the process works. And so just so we're kind of explaining, so we don't get confused. Someone makes a motion. They either get a second or they don't. If they don't get a second, then obviously the motion dies. If they do get a second, we can further discuss it, and then we vote on it. And if the votes are enough to pass it, it passes. If they're not, it doesn't, and then you move on to the next thing. So I am fine with your proposal. So you're making a proposal for a violation of 32-12-01-01-14, right?
Yes.
And is there a second to that motion?
This is Berrigan. I'll second that.
Okay. Further discussion. Hearing none, roll call.
Caputo?
No.
Asari?
No.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Lukami?
No.
Harris?
No.
Imtiaz?
No.
Kappas?
No.
Martin?
No.
Motahari?
No.
Okay. Sounds like the motion didn't carry. So the next discussion here was a letter of concern. Skip, you want to talk about that since you were the one that brought it up?
I love that I'm doing letter concern on Crown and Bridge and Perio. I would recommend a letter of concern showing caution for ensuring that periodontal considerations are fully explored and advised to the patient prior to restorative.
Okay. Any other comments to that letter of concern?
I second that. I also wanted to mention one of the reasons I disagreed is also we don't know if the patient knew what is going to happen and they just wanted to do it. So I agree. Sorry, a second.
No, that's fine. Harris, I think the advisory is what I hear. What I hear you saying in the advisory is better patient communication and explanation of their presenting status and appropriate treatment planning and sequencing.
Absolutely. Got it. Yeah, thank you.
Fair enough. Any other comments? So we have a motion by Harris, a second by Motihari for a letter of concern as described. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Sorry, yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay. We are now on final agenda item of section 4, 4B23, case number 2023-00160. Looking at that case and report. So here we have allegation one, failure to maintain records, substantiated. And there's a discussion by the investigator of what goes into that per statute. And there's also a comment about possible restitution. Based on the report and the records provided, I am recommending or proposing a violation of 32-1201-24. Is there a second? Further discussion? Other?
Harris seconds.
Okay. We have a second to the motion. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay. The violation approval is carried. So based on, again, that review and approval, I did not agree with the restitution, though I'm open for discussion. So I'm just recommending non-disciplinary CE, 4 hours of record keeping. So is there a second? Further discussion or other?
I agree. Second.
Second, Fukami. Further discussion? And just to be clear, is there any further thoughts or comments regarding the restitution? I just want to make sure others feel the same way. I didn't see that as being a reasonable request.
Yeah, this is Kappas. I agree. It wasn't. It's not necessary in this case.
Okay. Other discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Rukami?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Great job, everybody. There is our complaint log that you're always encouraged. We are now on agenda item. Wait. I keep saying four. I was actually supposed to be saying five. So no, I did say four. Did we skip five? Is that me? Am I reading this wrong? It goes from four to six. That's all right. As long as it's not me, Ryan. So the complaint log, as has been referenced before, is there for the committee review. Specifically, if you identify a complaint that's listed that you see a conflict. And as a reminder, once a conflict is identified, you should contact April. She will send you a document to complete. And taking it from somebody who has done this incorrectly, please read the document in its entirety. There are multiple questions for you to ask. Because when you submit it incorrectly, April will very kindly return it to you and tell you to redo it. But that is there for your review. To look ahead, Ryan, your point earlier was not lost, so I do appreciate you bringing that up. I think having the discussion on information that is in front of us and understanding that we likely will not get any more information should not stop us from making a recommendation to the board. At the end of the day, the board makes the final decision. So decreasing any workload on staff or others is certainly helpful and part of what our process is meant to do. But at the same time, if you feel as though that is not correct, obviously we have that opportunity to discuss that. Similarly, from a sequencing standpoint, you all have that form to complete, which I think is tremendously helpful. If you have a feeling, position, or otherwise on an issue, please make notes for yourself as to how to respond to that. Specifically concerning a letter of concern, if you want a letter of concern, my best advice is to write out what you would like to see in that letter of concern, so that when it comes to that point to discuss, we can put it right out there, and it's just a little bit easier for everybody, because that's what staff will then provide to the board for its review and acceptance, if that's where they end up. Summary of current events. Anything to comment on there, Ryan?
No, not really. I can probably give you a better break-in at some point in the future. There is a budget that passed at the legislature this last week, which is good, and our continuation will likely continue on at least until 25. That's kind of a longer story that I'll save for another date. And then there's some other legislation that affects the dental board to some degree. Dental therapy is finally gone through rule, and we can start licensing our first dental therapist beginning. Somebody remind me of the date. It's like July 10th, I think, is the first date that it becomes effective. And then I think that's all I wanted to give on Oh, one last thing, and Yasmin would tell me if I didn't give you this information. When she sends out the packet of information, she always inserts a link to RSVP, whether or not you'll attend. I think you guys are pretty good at it. A couple of the other committees on the board sometimes aren't super good at it. But if you'll just take the 30 seconds or less to tell us if you're going to attend or not, it would help greatly to manage the membership at whatever particular meeting.
Yep, and take it from someone who has not done that and thought they did. It will result in Yasmin sending you an email to please do it, so that helps her not have to send that email. Okay, possible action items for future meeting agendas. You sort of mentioned that already, Ryan, of stuff that you might discuss regarding the budget as well as other items. Anything else to add there, or that was about it?
Yeah, it's going to be always, this item will always be in your agenda if you wanted to add something else. I can't even think of anything right off the top of my head that you guys would want to look at, but maybe this one might be a good spot where somebody says, hey, we want to be the ones that review the chart audits to make alternate recommendations or something like that, or you want an investigative team to look at it or something like that. But we can put it on a future agenda for discussion.
And I appreciate that. And I think another good thing to mention, since you made that comment, and it sort of speaks to Skip's point earlier, you know, we are working really hard as a board, particularly through the folks like ourselves who are volunteering on these different committees, to address these complaints in a timely manner. And I strongly agree with some of the comments Skip had made with regards to having an early response to an AOR, and we are currently in the process, and we not being me directly, through the Anesthesia and Sedation Committee about making recommendations to the board. One of the recommendations that I think is going to end up getting adopted is actually to establish an Anesthesia and Sedation Committee sort of in perpetuity, and the goal with that committee will be to, with some level of immediacy, review these adverse occurrence reports when they occur so that we can respond to them in a more timely manner, as well as identify if immediate action towards a licensee's practice should be changed or impacted in any way due to what's reviewed and agreed upon by that committee. So that's another way of try to do these things a little bit faster. And I agree with that assessment. And it is important. And I also think it fulfills a requirement or a criticism by the auditor general that our review of complaints wasn't as timely as it could be. And even though that's significantly improved, and I even think within their suggested timelines, doing it sooner is always better for everybody, particularly the patients. So that's just something to throw out there that I certainly agreed with his comments on that. And so that's something that we're working on, I can assure you. And you guys help a lot. And I appreciate all the work you put into this. It's a lot of material to review. As you guys can appreciate, the more thoroughly we do our job, the more efficiently we can review and make recommendations on these complaints to help the board make appropriate adjudication. So I'll throw that in there. Next committee date is in the heat of summer. Does anybody currently see any issues with that date for them in terms of vacation, doing things nice for your children, even though that's not a requirement of parenting?
Sorry, I won't
be here. Mia, you do?
Yes.
So you won't be here. Anybody else know that they're not going to be around on that date?
I will not be available June 27th either.
And I will not be as well, correct?
Okay. So anybody else know that that's going to be a bad date for them? I'm sitting here talking. I should check too just to make sure, but I'm pretty sure it's okay for me. But so with three people, and the only person absent today was Dr. Calamci, correct? So if he were present or not present, would that impact a quorum, Yasmin, with three people from the current group not there?
No.
So we could still have a quorum. So, Umar, that means don't try to plan something else, okay? Yeah, I see it. I got
you. You got it.
Okay. Well, so for those of you who won't be with us in June, have fun whatever you're doing, and we'll see the rest of the group then. It is now 4:59, and we are adjourned. Thank you all very much.